This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, where we can all agree that we are part of the No Pie, No Sledgehammer team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bringing it back.
I think we can all agree to that. Awesome team here today, including my partner in crime, Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Hey there, guys. I'm coming off one of the best days in recent memory, and everybody else is wasted, so that's fun for me.
I'm not wasted.
I'm not wasted.
Mm-mm. Yeah, right. No. Yeah, right. I walked up and everybody was drinking.
Anyway. Someone sounds jealous.
You shut your face, Jeff Cannata.
That's awesome. She has perfected the fortune telling folding.
All right.
Nicole is here.
It'll be on eBay. Fortune teller?
Fortune teller?
Yeah, you're supposed to write stuff in the
thing. Numbers and colors.
It flips up, right?
Will you, yes or no question.
Yeah, and then it flips up.
Yes.
Oh, I loved those things.
Mm-hmm. It's like Magic 8 Ball, but better.
Yeah.
So now surprise has been spoiled. Nicole's back.
I'm back.
Hooray!
Yay. Thank you. I've been hard at work at origami.
Paper crafting.
Are you coming week after next to the extravaganza all day drinkathon / we will record things and be embarrassed?
Yes.
Awesome.
Cool. Oh, that's going to be fun. People should be aware we're recording holiday fun back to back.
Yes.
Which means by the end it will make absolutely no sense.
And there's going to be 1,000 guests, right?
Yeah.
We so far, pretty much everybody that we reached out to was like, yes, I'll come.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah.
That was easy. I was like,
Is that the
great.
That means if we didn't reach out to you, sorry.
Burn.
So here's the thing I've learned. If people live in San Francisco, they're probably not coming down the week before Christmas to do a podcast.
Stranger things have happened.
I know. I wish Adam was down here because Adam would have fun with that too. But he's off doing his own thing now. Yep. And Sam's up there and the Giant Bomb guys. So all those folks I would love to have, they're all in San Francisco. Unless we could like fold time, space time, and connect San Francisco and Los Angeles for, you know, a couple of hours.
Bourbon
makes you feel like that sometimes.
Folding California.
Sounds like an indie movie.
Yeah.
I think it's already been released.
Oh, Jeff, is it?
I don't know. it sounds like one.
Folding California.
And that's Jeff Mattis at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. It is. Hi. Hi, everyone.
Welcome to story time.
Welcome to story time. Actually, I have some great stories from the audience today from the Shaq News thread, but I'm going to save those because I know that if I don't let Jeff talk about Bioshock Infinite, which he has played within the last 4 hours,
I have.
He will probably spew Columbia all over us.
I literally, today, here's what happened today. I went and saw a screening of The Hobbit.
And not get sick.
And then, no, I don't understand why people would get sick. But anyway.
Did you have to, like, let your eyes pop and then, like, let your shoulders relax and get into the 48 frames?
Did you have to assume a position?
No, I don't know what you guys have been reading.
Well, no, it's just.
None of that is true.
Well, with the extra frames per second,
right.
Some people have been complaining about migraines.
Really?
I think it's getting the opposite nauseous
of,
or.
No.
The opposite of migraines?
Yeah, I mean, I think that.
Ingrains.
I don't know what that is.
Your grains.
Well, the 3D in non-48 frames is supposedly problematic. And the whole idea behind 48 frames is that it makes everything smoother and makes it's built for 3D.
So do they do a 48 frames version that's not in 3D?
No, it's married to the 3D.
Gotcha. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
It's the whole reason for doing it is so that 3D looks less bad.
Yeah. So there's actually more fidelity in the. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you can move the camera quicker and it doesn't. Yeah.
Right.
Wait, so 48 frames is only in 3D?
Yes.
I
would recommend watching it. There are a few weirdnesses that happen that look a little video-y, but for the most part, I
CGI-y?
Really like. Well, there's tons of CGI, and it's all very, very high quality.
It's an adjective.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not talking about The Hobbit, because I left The Hobbit and sped across town. Thank you for the foley. To play Bioshock Infinite. So this was a pretty great day, I have to say.
It sounds like it.
Two things that I've
been Bioshock Infinite, are you there?
Anticipating. And basically they plopped me down. This is how this is going to go today, I can tell. He's just going to be the freaking peanut gallery. Yeah. See. Yeah,
there we go.
I'm going to try to give people the information that they're looking for from this high-quality entertainment podcast.
And he's going to give them the sound effects to accompany it.
So the question that I have was, were you bio-shocked?
I was infinitely bio-shocked.
Oh, bring it around.
Thank you for the sad trombone.
Yeah, so it plopped me down, and we were able to... Oh, come on. Seriously.
The more attention you give him, the more he's going to do it.
We were able to play right from the beginning, and I played the first 2 hours. I would have played more, but I had to come here and endure this.
You actually had to leave your demo early for this?
So I don't know how much you guys want me to tell you.
How long of a demo was it?
It was the game. It was play as long of the game as you want.
So Bioshock Infinite, only 2 hours.
So is it
done?
No,
I had to leave and come here. It's not done. In fact, the bad news is they pushed it back another month.
Wait, so confirmed it's a 2 hour single player game? Did you hear it
first? I'm leaving.
First?
Bye, guys.
No, seriously.
I'm out. I'll see you guys.
Is the game finished? Because I know they delayed the game from, was it October until February?
It's March now. It's the end of March.
What? They delayed it again?
Yes.
Well, at least it's not to polish multiplayer.
No!
So, in your expert 2 hours of gameplay opinion, why is it coming out so late? Is it just that window of opportunity?
They want to polish it for 3 more weeks is what I was told. There's 3 more weeks of polishing.
So it was perfectly playable for a bunch of people to write their opinions about it in November, and then they need all this more time to polish it?
Well, I'm not saying that what I was playing was the finished version of the game. I'm saying that there was no limits on what we could do.
Okay.
So they just let you loose. And yeah. Like, go, go, go.
Yeah, please don't get me wrong that I was playing the finished version of the game. Clearly there's more work to be done. But we were... I didn't get to an end point. And I know people were playing longer than I, and the guy, as I was leaving to come here to endure this...
You're loving it.
They were like, did you want to skip ahead and see some later stuff? And I was like, I don't want to skip anything. The progression, what I played is some of the tightest, most densely packed, interesting gameplay I've played in a long time. I mean, this 2 hours could be my game of the year for this year.
What? Hold on.
It's phenomenal. Wow. It's phenomenal.
So you turn it on.
That's hyperbole.
Phenomenal. So you turn it on. You sit down. Take me through what happens the first 5 minutes.
Okay, well, so obviously this will be spoilers for the beginning of the game. So you've been warmed. Warmed.
I've been warmed.
You've been warmed.
My cockles have been warmed.
If I could leave the room right now, I would.
Do you remember how Half-Life 2 brought you into that world and
indelibly
set a tone, made you feel like this is a real world while simultaneously having... setting up the world, but also having this action moment and make you caring about characters immediately. Remember how that chase sequence across the rooftops?
Yeah, it's like grab you by the balls and punch you in the face at the same time.
Yeah, they do that again here. And, Bioshock is memorable for its beginning as you descend into rapture. Here, do you want me to just tell you what the beginning is?
Kind of, not really.
You're
so well, this brings up a whole other question.
I'm dying to play this, but... the other part of me is like, oh, I don't want to know anything.
Yeah. Well, at least he can't spoil anything major. Because
so here's the thing.
15 minutes in the game.
A bunch of media types were there, all playing it. Mm-hmm. There are going to be a ton of previews. So at this point in time, I mean, either you want to... This actually is a question that I have been struggling with over the last week in the unique situation of having been so busy that I haven't played tons and tons of games, and I've actually been removed very much to a point that I think is a little... You know, a lot of times... Our audience says, well, you just don't know what it's like anymore being a regular person playing games as a hobby because you play too many games.
Yep.
And I've always tried to stay grounded to that. And I think that there is some validity to that argument because over the last couple of weeks, because now it's been like 3 or 4 weeks that I've been really super crunching on getting Rider Rumble done. And mm-hmm. we're also working mm-hmm. on the third issue of Game Q. And we got a lot going on. So I've been super busy with all those things. And it struck me that, there's a bunch of stuff coming up in the spring that Andrew started going out and Jeff has been going out to events on. You went out to an event on Bioshock Infinite. Mm-hmm. And I thought, there's actually a valid point here about why we in the games industry approach the preview phase of games the way we do. Because we preview games in a very different sort of way than I think that other medias approach maybe music is similar. Like music, you get like a track from an album ahead of time, but that's only like one track that's a snapshot.
But it's also a finished product.
Right.
At preview events, the majority of the time, you're not seeing a finished product.
But can you imagine if you, like, yeah, so imagine if you sat down to like watch a movie and as a trailer, instead of showing you, you know, these few glimpses, and we've talked about, I mean, you guys, especially on TRS, have talked about trailers that have blown movies before.
Almost all of them do.
Right. But imagine if you sat down and like, it just gave you like the first 10 minutes of the new Star Trek.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
they do that a lot actually for press.
It's kind of messed up. They do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I just don't watch those.
Like
well,
Show
and then,
West.
And then they also do stuff like, okay, here's an early screening of the film, but only 60% of the effect shots are in here. Yeah. So you'll play up to an effect shot and then you'll get a title card that's like effect here, you know.
I think the more important conversation to have is about BioShock Infinite.
And the upshot
everybody kind of wants to hear that.
I want to know about BioShock Infinite, but then again, I don't want to mess up my experience with it, but I want to know about it.
Well, here's a vague way of talking about it. The cool thing that struck me in a very general sense is that the first time you go down into Rapture, you start in the first BioShock, you're taken by the destroyed nature of this once amazing world.
Yep.
And you're led to imagine what it must have been like when it was at its peak.
Right.
When here, those you bunny start. Masks seem like a good idea.
Yeah. Here, you start when it's at its peak and you see a vibrant fantasy utopia of what this crazy person created.
So when you're at the beginning of the game, the Vox Populi haven't become a complete like rebel faction tearing the place apart. It's not ripped apart at the end.
That's not the impression I got from the trailers. I've
I know.
Seen.
I thought it was
so
all.
That's interesting.
I thought it was
being
in the middle of war.
Right.
Yeah. I had no idea.
That's
God,
cool.
There's so much.
Right. So you start. I mean, you start not there. You go there. And you're part of...
You start not there. I like that, but I don't want to know where that is.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. Go ahead.
I mean,
sorry.
It's Skyoshock, right? So you're not in the sky yet.
Yeah.
Then not, you go to the sky.
It's not like you're in a plane that crashes on another flying
thing.
Is
it a Zeppelin?
Right. And there's a long time before you meet Elizabeth. You get to see... it's so incredible. I can't even begin to tell you. Just walking around... the Columbia, which is what the sky Oshock land is called,
Skyshock.
Walking around there at how it looks, how much of the world, how many details they have put in, how much you get to see and do just wandering around this utopia that has been created in the sky that is this weird sort of mix between steampunk and colonial America and is very dark and disturbing, and man, they go there with iconography and religious concepts and political concepts that are really, really jarring.
So, like, one thing I was trying to figure out, ascertain just from the art and stuff, is what, like, do they ever identify what the time period is for this? Is it like
there's
18...
a date? There's a date.
There is.
Yeah, late 1800s.
So it's like
1890 something.
Well,
I think.
It wasn't like post like one of the world's fairs, and this is basically like a huge project that America made to show how badass we are. It's basically
like the new Wild Wild West.
You wander around in here, and you can look at these kinetoscopes. Well, I think they're
Will Smith cameo. Yeah.
Aren't those kinetoscopes? Is what they used to be called? The little you put them on. You know, you like. It's like the Viewmaster viewers.
Yeah.
And they're little short films, and they all have dates and fake newspaper clippings and stuff. So it's very specifically set.
Do they act as like the journal things that you would get from like Atlas?
No, you still get voice recordings that you can listen to. It's like BioShock and every other game now really has used that. But yes, it is very squarely about, I guess this would be a spoiler if potentially, but it is very squarely about racism, which
really?
I don't know of another game that has taken that
that's
on.
That's freaky.
Yes.
I mean, not freaky bad. I mean, it's just like, that's intense.
Intense. It is intense. The sequence where the shit hits the fan at the beginning of the game, where you divert from being a member of this society to being the
guy that's like, fuck this shit, I'm doing my thing.
Yeah, there's a word for
that. I don't know.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, the thing that happens is you confronting racism and making a choice. And that is a very powerful moment, and the game gets very dark. But in this crazy bright utopian world at the same time.
Dude, that's intense.
It is extremely intense. And it does not shy away from, I mean, it's about religion in a very direct sense, much more direct than any other.
Like crucifixes on the wall or like,
no, like
actual
scripture.
Dialogue?
Like the main bad guy's name calls himself the prophet, and you're wandering around and seeing scripture quotes and people praying, and you're, the very beginning of the game, you walk through a religious ceremony, and people are, and I have never, I mean, this is again a spoiler, but at the very beginning of the game, I have never seen any game do this. You have a first person baptism happen
what?
To you. You get Whoa. Baptized.
All right. That's rad. I have to hold you for a second because we have to pause on baptism to take a quick sponsor break. When we come back, I'll let you like launch right back into the
rebirth.
Like, God, it sounds so
good. You've totally blown me away. So yeah. I need to regroup anyway. So we'll take a little regroup, sponsor message, and we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. You might consider Threat Vector by Tom Clancy and Mark Greaney, narrated by Lou Diamond Phillips. Jack Ryan has only moved back into the Oval Office when he is faced with a new international threat. An aborted coup attempt in the People's Republic of China has left President Wei Zhenlin with no choice but to agree with the expansionist policies of General Su Kequang. They have declared the South China Sea a protectorate and are planning an invasion of Taiwan. The Ryan administration is determined to thwart China's ambitions, but the stakes are dangerously high as a new breed of powerful Chinese anti-ship missiles endanger the U.S. Navy's plans to protect the island. That's Threat Vector, available on audible.com right now. So go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. And thanks to our friends at Audible Podcast for sponsoring the Weekend Confirmed show and bringing you entertainment like this, where we are getting to listen to Jeff talk about.
And that was a beautiful read, although it did sound a little bit like you said anti-shit missiles.
No, it didn't.
A little bit.
No, it didn't.
But I would love to have. If
yeah,
I
the world needs
that.
Those.
I would love to have. Like, someone needs to invent that.
We'll stockpile those bastards.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Oh, dear. So far we have a game that tackles racism and right off the bat has you baptized.
Yeah.
Is it a made-up religion or is it Christianity?
Well, it's obviously a cult. I mean, in the same way that Rapture was a sort of
offshoot of
right, but weren't they
kind of
communist? There's no religion. Religion is like the drug of the people. That was
well, no,
like
but I mean, it was still a cult. Banners. It was a sort of a socioeconomic cult. You know what I mean? In the same way, and they make no bones about the fact that you know, this is not. I don't think it's meant to be any specific group of people, but it certainly is about religion in a very direct way, and you know. Not to get off on a tangent, but part of the thing that struck me right away is that the concepts and the issues that are at play here right at the beginning are even more that thing we've talked about before with other games where I feel like, you know, I want to take the moral high ground and I want to be this hero to these people, but I'm also a sociopathic mass murderer.
Right.
You know, like I literally am rampaging through this town, murdering hundreds of people
for good.
In cold blood. And for good, and oftentimes I was provoked, but other times I walk up behind people and club them over the head, and I'm like, I am a horrible person. In the context of this world, it just seems even more repugnant, you know? It just seems more...
Interesting.
It stands out more, but that's neither here nor there, because it's a video game where action needs to happen.
Right.
And the action is awesome.
Did you ride any of the awesome roller coaster thingies?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so cool.
Oh, God.
It really is very cool.
Is it awesome. Easy? Does it make sense? Because when I was watching the demo E3's past, I thought there's no way I'm going to figure that out.
I had the same fear. I really worried that it was going to be – it was either going to be completely out of my hands and just a on rails, or it was going to be so obtuse that I really wouldn't even want to use it. I found myself loving it, and part of the reason is they allow you to leap onto things much farther distance than I would have assumed I would have been able to do. So it allows you to think ahead because you're moving so rapidly. You can plan your actions and execute your actions far enough in advance that you don't have to wait till you write up, so you'll miss it and it'll screw up and you'll fall and die and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, interesting.
It's more like Dishonored was, where you can really, like – place your target far and leap to that place and then keep kind of chaining them together. And then once you get on the rail, you are zooming and you really have momentum. So if you're, you know, just like on a roller coaster, if you're climbing up a steep incline of the rail, you lose speed and then you crest and you come down and you gain speed. Uh-huh. And the more speed you have, the more potential damage you can do when you leap off and attack someone and stomp on their face, which is super fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's, well, I'm very excited.
It's really cool. And all of the, you know, the first time you get the vigors, which are the plasmids of this game,
right?
And the way you get them, and the it's so satisfying. Each of them affects you in a very interesting way.
What was the coolest one that you experienced in your 2 hours?
Can you confirm bees?
Birds.
Birds.
Oh, I have to tell you about the difference between the birds and the bees. Sometimes.
Okay. But when I'm older.
When you're older, but there are, yeah, the three that I got so far are Fireball, which isn't like a fireball you would get in, you know, the first Bioshock or in any other game. It's more of a fire grenade that you can turn into a fire trap. There is Possession, which you can possess both people and robots. So you can possess a turret. You can possess vending machines.
And what happens to your – is this one of those things where – I mean, like, is it like Dishonored where you actually inhabit that thing?
No.
Or okay, so you're actually – you have to worry about where you are when you do this, like your physical body.
Yeah, you don't leave your body. You possessing just means basically changing it from against you to for you.
Oh, okay.
But it's cool.
You're not actually. Yeah,
you're not actually taking its. Gotcha. You're taking control of it. You're just you shoot out this really cool like ghost thing that follows it and then sucks into it. And then if you do it to a human, they turn on each other and commit suicide. If you do it to a robot, it'll work for you instead of working against you.
Cool.
So it's a way of sort of hacking the robots instead of hacking them, you just use the
defend
power.
Them.
Yeah. And then the birds is like the bees where birds will attack them. And how you get that power is super crazy cool. I won't spoil that. What else do you guys want to know?
Well, okay, so you're talking about this world feels really alive and vibrant. And so-
yes. So you're wandering through – you arrive in Colombia – and you wander through a very prolonged section that is full of so much detail and so many interesting things for you to be able to do that sort of also do a double purpose of tutorial of different – like you walk through this carnival and you can walk up to different displays and find out information about the world, talk to all these different characters. And almost every character you walk up to has dialogue. They're talking amongst themselves. They talk to you. And then you'll walk up to like a shooting gallery so you can, you know, basically practice shooting. You walk up to this thing where you use vigor for the first time and you can practice using vigor. But it's so interesting and there's so many things that are being foreshadowed. Like you see this giant mechanical bad guy and you know, oh, I'm going to fight that guy at some point. And there's so many characters roaming around and, you know, and it's all these different floating Zeppelin machines and they're all constantly moving. So, you know, one is at your plane and then one is above it and then it comes back down to your plane and then you know, there'll be like you'll hear like a song and it'll be like a barbershop quartet and then all of a sudden you'll see this surface, you know, that's being suspended below a Zeppelin come into view and it's actually the barbershop quartet singing on this.
Oh, wow.
Thing. It's so there's so much of that. So many tiny details, and then how you finally meet Elizabeth is spectacular, and how what she means, and how you come across her. I won't spoil that, but
so
there's so many complex, interesting mechanics and world building bits that are communicated so deftly in such a short period of time.
So it sounds like one of the things they've changed is that they have a number of NPCs to interact with. So
well,
it's a
you
lot
don't
of dialogue.
You don't. It's not interacting with them in the sense that you would, you know, in Skyrim or something. It's
because one of the things about
you're just
Bioshock,
walking up to them and they speak.
So they essentially are
dialogue trigger points.
Anthropomorphized tape decks. Because remember, like you're walking around.
But it creates a vibrancy to the world that you don't have in a Rapture where everything is
attacking you.
attacking you, but everything is dead. Everything is gone. Everything is what used to be there.
Well, so and the other sort
is
of
it
question.
More vibrant to have an inanimate NPC that just just spits out a recorded response? Than
it doesn't
it is to
feel
have a tape
that
recorder?
Way. But it doesn't feel that way. You also have the tape recorders, but it also doesn't feel that way because they're talking amongst themselves and you're just overhearing their conversations.
You're just a bystander in this city.
It's a world that's happening around you.
Now, is it alive enough that you feel like? Because, I think about other opening sequences for games where it's sort of this, like, we're introducing you to the world and it's really like Half-Life and, like, the recent Deus Ex game. It's like there's a lot of really cool stuff to look at, but you don't ever feel like, you kind of feel like you're in a Disneyland. Like, okay, here they're introducing me to all this stuff. I'm going to look left. I'm going to look right. Do you feel like there's more stuff that, is the world so saturated with stuff that you are like, man, I didn't see everything going through
definitely.
This first time.
I definitely didn't see everything. There's a sort of two levels of it. There's the first moment that I haven't really described, and maybe I won't because it's pretty cool.
That's a good idea, not too.
Yeah, that is sort of the equivalent of the Half-Life 2 train ride, or
that's
the
what
BioShock.
I thought you were. That's what I thought you were referring to. Was
yeah,
the
no,
train
this
ride.
Is what I've been talking about up to this point is everything sort of after that because you have that sort of train ride or the BioShock Rapture descent into the water. That moment where you're sort of you're seeing the levels of Rapture as you go down, you still get that moment going to Columbia, but which is spectacular. But
you're talking about
after
like
that,
good morning, Mr. Freeman, like that sort of where you're walking through the labs and everybody's doing their thing. And
And then the
locker room
up to the point where it's like, go, go, go. You got to get to what's his name? Benson's house when they're running across the rooftops.
I can't
remember his name, but doctor or whatever.
OK.
Benson. But so that
Ensign
whole,
Benson.
I consider that Ensign whole Benson. Thing the beginning of Half-Life 2, where that whole rooftop chase up until you get to that house is sort of the prologue, in the same way that there's this nice version of the world where no one's attacking you and you're just sort of wandering around exploring, and then there's an action sequence that brings you into the game proper.
Now, so what's it like when they take the training wheels off? Is it sort of is it more open worldy or is it sort of like?
No, it's very directed.
Very directed. So, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
It's directed in the same way that BioShock was directed in the sense that you can wander off the beaten path and there's things to find. I mean, I wandered into an area I wasn't supposed to be in and I found an optional side quest that said, I could find this key.
Kill six wolves.
No,
why do you say it was a place you weren't supposed to go?
Well, it was not. It wasn't the next objective. It was
a
side area that I found where I wandered around and
so that's
found a
good.
Chest that was locked. And then an optional side quest came up and said, find the key. Optional.
That's cool. So there's a lot of flexibility in how
that.
To yeah, room for how you attack.
Are there
this thing
a lot of locked doors? I always hate in like games where the world is really important to have a bunch of facades of houses and stuff you can't interact with.
You mean by locked? You mean that are just like
they're just doors? They don't open.
Yeah,
they're just textures. Wall textures.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's a fair amount of that. Yeah.
All right.
I'm no more or less than any other game.
Right on. No, in BioShock, I had this urgency, and I felt totally justified in all my killing, like you were saying earlier about you're kind of a murderer. Now, is there that same justification in this game? Because
yes, this is a horrible society doing horrible things, and yet I felt like, if I'm going to keep the moral high ground, I can't just slaughter them. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance.
Of course you can, Jeff. Come on. Yeah, I mean, this is video games, right?
I mean, when you're talking about a game that is so concerned with moral questions and geopolitical overtones and, it's really talking about the sweep of history and how – I mean, they very clearly set up – the Washingtonians versus the Lincolntonians, whatever you want to call it. The Lincolnians, I guess you would say. And I assume there's going to be lots more of that as the game progresses because the society sort of worships Washington, Jefferson, and Franklin as their sort of key figures and their statues to them. And then you find this sort of underground group that is much more interested in Lincoln.
Tesla. Oh, okay.
Well, Tesla's, I'm sure, involved as well
because
there's
Tesla
coils everywhere.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys kind of think of if you have any questions you want to wrap up with Jeff on. We'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we can wrap up BioShock Infinite. I want to ask about American exceptionalism because that's like the big topic of the philosophy underneath Columbia. And also wrap up maybe the mechanics of it because we didn't talk about that. So stick around. We'll be right back with round two of Weekend Confirmed. Does sort of feel like Don Johnson on a walk through the door right now.
Exactly. It was dope, though.
There you go. So, question I had about all of Bioshock Infinite. Number one was, did you get to play much of the shooting action?
Yes.
And how would you rate the raw mechanics of the shooter engine versus prior Bioshocks versus the current state of where we are with first-person shooters?
I really thought the shooting was solid. I really enjoyed it. My gripe is that to look down the iron sights, it's pressing in the stick.
So it's Halo style.
Yeah. And it seems to want
using the triggers for other things?
Yeah, using the triggers for your, not plasmids, your vigor.
Okay.
So your left hand is your, you know, superpower, your vigor, and your left it's tied to your left trigger. And your left bumper switches among the vigor that you've got.
So how critical are iron sights then?
It seems to want you to use them. It certainly suggests it in several tooltips that come up. And it increases your accuracy a lot. And I found myself really wanting to use them. But other than that, and just because it was a little bit of a pain to, you know, to pull them up that way.
I just don't have – that's probably one of the things I have the least amount of, you know, actual – conscious control over, I guess, like that. If there's a button that I'm apt to press accidentally, it's a click on the stick on either side.
Yeah,
so that's kind of troublesome. But.
Yeah, it's a little annoying, but other than that, I found the shooting to be really fun and really solid, and it felt good.
That's good.
And I really like how they've got notifications in this game when you give damage. They shoot up like in Borderlands.
So you get the point values, and
they'll
sort of include that in the final game.
Cascade off. I hope so. It certainly seems
interesting because
that is weird because it's kind of a almost comical effect.
Yeah, it's very gamey,
And it seems serious game.
Now, does it lighten? I mean, do you think they did that to lighten up the fact that you're dealing with all this crazy stuff?
I doubt that particular decision was based on that. But I mean, as serious a game as it is, the art style is very exaggerated in the same way that Bioshock was.
Right.
And especially when you meet Elizabeth, she looks like a Disney princess to me. Mm. And she talks like one too.
Mm.
So it very much seems, you know, painterly and exaggerated.
Is it that,
and,
I mean, I always got the impression that was trying to evoke some of the sense of the period.
Perhaps. But you sort of find her in a tower.
You're rescuing a princess from a tower. Yeah. Like,
I take it you didn't have any moments in like 1985 with in front of theaters.
Why would you take that?
Well, you did.
Yes.
Oh, well, I don't want to know about that part.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to know about that part.
Back to a question about weapons.
Yeah.
Are we sticking to like accurate pre-World War I weapons, or are we having more fun with kind of like the steampunk?
There's definitely steampunk.
Okay. There's interesting weapons. It's not like one bullet, let's wait 20 minutes.
Well, why would they stick to that? I mean, you're on a flying city state.
Sure.
So it's not like they're like, oh, we got to make sure this. We got to make sure this shit's realistic.
Right.
There's robots. Lots of them.
That's realistic. It is.
In my dreams.
So in our upcoming third GameCube, we have like a huge cover story is Bioshock Infinite. And Eric Nayer talked to Ken. And one of the things they really focused on was this whole American exceptionalism thing.
Mm-hmm.
How well, I mean, having read the interview and all that, it's like, oh, it sounds like it's really prominent. But how well do the themes of the game come through?
They're front and center.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Because I think that's really challenging to do, right? I mean, it's really challenging in a game where you're ostensibly, like you said, running around murderizing a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
Murderizing?
Yeah. Mm. It's pretty tough to still stay on any sort of focus of any philosophical grounds other than, I shoot people, kill them.
Does it tell you what the themes of the game are? Like, if someone who's like 14 plays this, are they going to see the themes and
I can't imagine how you would possibly miss them. It's, I mean, as I said, it's about racism. It's about religion. It's about corruption. It's about broken ideals in the same way that the first Bioshock was. Mm. It's about an idea taken too far. And yes, that idea happens to be American exceptionalism and this sort of God worship of – it's where politics and religion intersect, and the God worship of, you know, Washington, Jefferson, and Ben Franklin, to be frank.
So it sounds like overall you're way more excited even now than you were before.
Like I said, it is an experience that is all too rare in gaming to be this thoroughly – welcomed into a world,
but as much as you love
a world created around you.
So backing off the hyperbole just a touch.
Sure.
Dishonored, XCOM.
Yeah, excellent games. And I love Dishonored.
Completely outclassed.
I love Dishonored. I think Dishonored is definitely in the discussion of game of the year. You clearly see this is the sort of major league version. This is sort of
it really is.
It's just they're just trying for a little harder, a little higher pedestal, and that is not to take anything away from Dishonored. You just kind of see to me. It's like, and forgive me, people are going to hate me for saying this, but for me, it's like Diablo 3 to Torchlight 2. Torchlight 2 is a fucking awesome game. It's a great game. Diablo 3 is just kind of trying for something a little more.
Well, if you look at the resources behind both projects and you know, I mean, Bioshock Infinite is a sequel to one of the best selling games of the year that Bioshock came out.
Right.
And, you know, Harvey Smith, while we all know who he is and Dishonored was awesome, it doesn't have that same sort of Dishonored 2 might have the same sort of, you know, chutzpah that the Infinite does, but that
I think I totally disagree with you guys.
But... Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I think there might be a tendency to buy into the hype of the Bioshock name a little bit there.
Well, it's an established IP that people already love, so I mean, it has that going for it.
I don't see, even if the shooting is good, essentially Bioshock Infinite is refinishing ideas that they've already done in Plasmids.
It's in the air now, man.
It's in the air, okay. Whereas, the beauty and elegance of Dishonored comes from all the different ways you can tackle things. I mean, I'm about to have a bunch of time off, and I can tell you, one of the games I'm definitely, definitely, definitely playing is Dishonored.
Don't misconstrue my statement or my position as being anti-Dishonored.
I'm not saying anti, but I'm, like saying that this is the major league version of that game. That's rough. That's pretty tough.
It's not that Dishonored is anything less than what you think it is. It's just that this might be more.
What I'm saying is Dishonored does a spectacular job of world building.
Okay.
Of creating this alternate history /future/ whatever you want to call
space.
It.
Different place. Takes you away to someplace else.
But then when you see how Bioshock Infinite does it, it's just taking the idea of bringing you into a world. You know, that sequence when you start Dishonored and you're, you know, on the boat and you come up that lift and the waterfalls are on either side of you and you're welcomed in and you sort of, you meet your daughter, all that stuff, top notch. It just, for my money, doesn't hold a candle to the first 2 hours of
Bioshock. Now, how much of that has to do with how tightly scripted it is? Because Dishonored opening, totally scripted, you get to the point where you're in a mission and it's like, boom, okay, you're in a mission area, do your thing. How closely does Bioshock Infinite sort of equate to that? Are you in an open-y world kind of thing?
I think at least the point I had gotten to at this when I had to stop was still in a very tightly structured,
very, very focused,
and I don't know if the game stays that way the whole way through. It may very well do that. There are pockets, like I said, you can wander around that carnival, you can explore certain areas, and you can take as much time doing that as you want before you move on to the next kind of structured pathway.
Are you going back to that carnival at some point?
No, things happen and things change. I just feel like there's so much detail. And there is so much thought put into how this world was put together, and there's so many fresh ideas of how you get around the world.
I guess what it boils down to is Dishonored is a game that I can go back to and play the same level twice and based on how I approach it, it's going to be totally different. Is this more of a, like, you know, you go
different
on
guns, yeah, different
you, yeah,
powers.
You go, yeah, you go on Pirates of the Caribbean once at Disneyland, right? You're like, oh, wow, this is rad. And then you go on it again. You're like, oh, this is rad. But okay, now I know, like, what's happening and what's going to come.
Yeah, I think on that scale, Dishonored, at this point in what I've seen with BioShock Infinite, Dishonored wins. Right. I think at this point, I mean, if you think back to BioShock 1, that's not a game. I mean, you could, you know, take down the Big Daddies in a different way, yada, yada, yada. But for the most part, it was a linear progression through story points.
Yeah.
And I think that Dishonored definitely has more variety and more creativity involved in how you take down those objectives than what I have seen on display thus far in BioShock Infinite. But I'm just so much more impressed with the context and... Again, it doesn't have to be a versus kind of argument because they're both.
I apologize. I wasn't trying to make you defend it in this regard.
Yeah,
I apologize. I wasn't trying.
The way you're brought into this fantasy, the way the rules of the world are explained, how you get sort of gravitas and stakes right away in this world, I was so impressed with.
So. Summing it all up, there's no doubt that BioShock Infinite has the BioShock magic.
It does.
Obviously.
So far, what I've seen.
Which is good, because next year is pretty ram-jammed. When we talk here in a couple weeks about upcoming games of 2013.
That whole quarter is packed with games. They just announced Crisis 3 was like February 19th.
Yeah, Visualante 2 on GAF has put together a quick list of stuff.
I mentioned that this was pushed back to the end of March again.
Yeah.
Already, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So here's January, February, and March, a couple of highlights.
Scary.
You got DMC. Mm-hmm. Interesting to see how that does. You've got Ni No Kuni. Okay, now that for us.
I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about that. We're excited about it. I think it's a little nichey, but
it is nichey. Yeah, it's not going to be like, you know.
Couple other titles in January, but not that huge. Then February, you start getting them. You got Dead Space 3. You get Sly Cooper, Thieves in Times. You get Aliens, Colonial Marines, finally. You get Metal Gear Rising, Revengeance. You get Crisis 3. Then in March, you're going to get, now you know BioShock Infinite's going to be there. You get SimCity. You get Tomb Raider. You get God of War. You get StarCraft 2, Heart of the Swarms. You get Gears of War. You get Army of Two. You get Fuse. You get Castlevania, Lords of Shadow, Mirror of Fate. You get Rayman Legends. You get Pikmin 3 sometimes in the spring. And you also get The Wonderful 101.
And you didn't say GTA 5, like, which should
May.
Is it May?
Well, they always
Q1.
They always launch games in May. That's just my...
Spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and
that's the most ridiculous.
There are no games coming out in the rest of the year, which is like, oh, I wonder if there's a new console coming out.
You know what I predict the big loser there is? Aliens.
My wallet?
I think Aliens Colonial Marines is a loser, but I hope I'm wrong.
Well, there's going to be a lot of losers there.
I don't think I'm off. I think James already knows that I'm super concerned about Fuse.
Yeah.
I'm super concerned about Fuse.
New
because
IP.
It's one of those games where, well, everybody went to that most recent open house they had and was like, oh, the game's super fun to play, and we had a great time with it, which those are all great things to say. It's just that outside of the gamer community, I think that it now looks so very samey.
They don't have enough time to promote it properly, I don't think. I know that they've been working on it for a long time, but they promoted it as something else.
And we all joked about it. Like, that box art was the worst box art of box art.
It was every box art pose on there. It was perfect.
Like, here's the ones I'm excited about.
It's like
most.
A boy band.
BioShock Infinite, obviously. Then Crisis 3.
Okay.
Then Sly Cooper.
Interesting.
Then Metal
Sly
Gear.
Cooper. Sly Cooper over Metal Gear.
Uh-huh. Then Ni No Kuni. Then... What's Anarchy Reigns again?
You're not
Sega Brawler, right?
That's the Sega Brawler that Platinum did. You're not excited about that.
Not so much.
And yeah, I'm really not excited about Dead Space 3.
That's right.
But, you know, I'm a sort
has
of
co-op now.
Army of Two.
Army of Two. Yeah.
Well, then there you go. There's your assignment to prep for the
big a lot show of EA games.
Or as I call it, Army of Deuce.
Well, we'll have assignments so that you can like be prepared with your show, with your games. What games did you like to have prepared for that? What was your top one was?
Infinite.
BioShock Infinite, but after that.
Crisis 3.
So maybe you could do Crisis 3. Sly, you should definitely do Sly.
Crisis 2.
Oh, and
loved it.
And right now is when Silent Dante is like, Garnet, you need to play this.
You played Crisis 3 at E3.
Yeah.
Really good.
Blown away.
Yeah, played E3 too.
Yep.
But the compound bow was rad.
One last thing I want to say about BioShock Infinite is that I played it on a PC with a controller.
Great.
I don't want to make the mistake I made with Far Cry 3 where I bought it for 360 instead of PC. Because I think we're at that point now where it's time to be playing.
Well, it's the end of the gen, right?
It's the end of the gen.
Yep.
And it looked demonstrably better on PC than it did.
Jeff's been playing all of his games of late on PC.
He's a smart person.
No, I migrate. I mean, and that was even not even a conscious thing. Like, I just slowly, basically over the last year or so, if given a choice, I will pick the PC version. And sometimes that's just because, hey, no difference. I'm playing it with a controller, but it's going to look better on my PC.
What's the chance that Big Picture becomes like the stealth entry for PCs into the living room?
I was just going to say that. My goal for the next month is to just bite the bullet and freaking get a cable, whatever I need to do, get my shit worked out so I can get my stuff on the television.
Press the magic button and get it on there.
And I can still play with a controller. I can still be sitting on my couch. All these games are going to look so much better.
Can you use an Xbox controller?
Sure.
Of course. Mm-hmm. You can even use the wireless. There's a little dongle that plugs into USB port, and you sync it up the same way, and then you got your controller hooked up.
It's just the time. It's time. Because as much as I'm enjoying Far Cry 3, it's like I keep thinking about how much better it would look on the PC.
It's an interesting...
And I wish I could tell you that, you know,
that I'm
sort
wrong.
Of assuage you.
You're all right. Yeah. The PS3 didn't have any... I played it on PS3. It didn't have any texture pops. Didn't have any of that.
Yeah, but it still doesn't look as good as the PC.
Sure. Well, I haven't seen it. I haven't compared it.
Yeah, it's.
But I never thought that I was lacking.
Now, and in fairness, the 360 version, the texture work is pretty close. It's not, you know, obviously there's a notch up.
The problem is there's a notch up.
Yeah, the thing that bothered me the most about it is the screen tearing.
Yeah,
and that may not bother you at all. Like, depending on what kind of a gamer you are, you may not even notice it. But I hate it. But it's, yeah.
I wish there was an option to just turn on VSync. I would take the frame rate hit.
You would. Really?
Yeah, it bothers. The screen tearing thing really bothers.
Oh,
me.
And by the way, there is a hack. This is a Far Cry 3 note, but there's somebody came up with a little script or a little hack you can run that basically will remove the HUD.
Oh, interesting.
On the PC version,
which is cool.
How much
super
of
super immersive?
Everything. Which
really like so, even like angry dog symbol and all that shit.
Yeah, I hate that stuff. Like the paw print. Like no. I'm just chilling.
I
yeah.
don't. That's no, I don't think so. I think it's UI stuff. So
like
it's
the GPS.
It's the GPS. It's the
health.
Map. It's all the reminders. It's also the QTE prompts, which sucks because that's the one game.
You're fucked.
Somebody's gonna.
You're fucked.
Somebody's gonna mod it. Somebody's gonna mod it so that it actually you get those prompts and you don't. But but the screens that I've seen, I haven't actually tried it myself. But damn, if you take away that extra crap on the screen, the game is just like wow. It's really you just get this whole window into. Hmm.
If we're moving on to talk about Far Cry 3 now, I have to say that I fired it up after Jeff's recommendation, and although I've only gotten to play through like the first couple of hours, it's freaking amazing.
I agree.
I am so in love with the game.
Yeah. I'm not insane.
No, it's great. And it's exactly the kind of game I love.
The game kind of makes you think you're insane. So.
Yeah, it does. Maybe I am insane.
Yeah,
maybe
you're just in good company.
That first mushrooms tripping balls section, that's pretty fun.
Because Jeff was doing PC and Nicole did PS3, I threw it on 360, and I agree. Like, it's nice to play 360 because you get the big screen. So I'm with you. Like, I want to go back maybe in the next segment and talk about this whole, like, PC in the living room thing because I'm really interested about that, too, because I've been thinking about that as well. But the screen tearing I can almost live with for having it on like the 50-inch television because it looks.
But you can do that.
I know. If I ran like the.
You don't get achievements. How are people going to know
care.
You're good at games if you don't have points?
Well, I get Steam achievements.
People know I'm terrible at games.
I get Steam achievements.
And I still get points.
Although I have to ask, one of the things that people have noted in annoyance is that because it's Ubisoft, you have to do like a double login in order to play Far Cry. Like you log into Steam, but then it takes you out and you log into Uplay, and then you can play the game. Is that how that works?
Well, yeah. Look, it's a Uplay thing, right? So you don't have to have anything open except for Uplay, but you do have to install Uplay.
Is that yogurt that helps with your stools?
Yes.
It's high in fiber. Uplay. When you're regular, you feel better.
That's good. It's like Ublast or something.
No!
I was going for Yoplay.
Yoplay. Oh,
right.
Okay. That's not, awesome. Not Captivia or whatever.
Activia. Not Captivia. Captivia sounds awful. You're never going to leave.
That keeps the crap inside. It keeps it all
keep
bound
it
up.
In Captivia.
Back to the anti-ship missiles.
Okay, and then other products.
Sorry to get all scatological on you folks.
So here's my personal take on it is the people that are aggro every time like some third party or some company comes out with something that's not Steam as a platform to release their titles. I think, you know, it's not convenient. I'd love it if it were in Steam, but You play's been working fine for me.
But admittedly, so. Ubi has been tough about this. I mean, they've had a bunch of the always on stuff, have to connect to the internet stuff, and that is a downside to where PC gaming has gone because
and they've gotten backlash for that. So I feel
rightfully
maybe this is,
yeah. I mean, there is a point at which it gets a little ridiculous that you have to be connected to the internet all the time.
You can
play
it in offline mode. You can. Yeah.
So they're not like Diablo 3 or SimCity. I believe is going to be the same. Am I correct that SimCity is going to require an always on connection? Wasn't there some complaint?
That's ridiculous.
That?
Yeah. That's a single player game. Sure, there are multiplayer elements, but come on.
So all those things that have been said.
I know, and it sucked.
First 2 hours or so impression of Far Cry are amazing because it's open world game, but right off the bat, I'm
another game that ushers you into the world in a really clever
way.
Yeah. It started so happy. It reminded me of Dead Island and how it started. Like, you're all like, yeah, and I know this song. And you're like, yeah, that sounds like fun. And
Can I do that? Can I break off on just a tiny tangent right there? Yeah. Because...
Really don't like MIA? That's your tangent?
No. I couldn't help wondering, as much as I love the game, is there a game in that beginning part? Like, can I have 2 or 3 hours of a game in that before the shit hits the fan?
Which is like taking shots at scorpions and stuff?
I don't think you'd want that. I think that it, while the romantic... I think what you're saying is that that intro did its job exactly perfectly because you liked that romantic view of those things and you thought that was cool and it gives
you... I think
you
romantic is a weird word to use. I know you're using the capital R version.
Right.
But I'm not saying I want a romance game.
No, I know. I mean, I'm saying they
romanticize... I really wanted to know about my relationship with Aaron.
They romanticize this idea of being on this tropical vacation and doing all these crazy things and some of it's kind of fun, kind of frat boy, and some of it's kind of fun outdoors athleticism stuff and you're having this great time and... Oh, shit.
And without spoiling anything, you do get to revisit some of that sort of stuff.
Like
well, I've already been hang gliding, and that's super fun.
Yeah, that is super fun. No, but no, I mean actual like flashbacky.
Oh, things. That's cool. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll get to that. That's awesome. But the reason I thought that is, you know, in the movie version of the Far Cry story, which is every sort of horror movie that's ever been made, you know, is... You get a half an hour, 45 minutes of setting up normalcy before craziness
happens.
Well,
this is like Turistas, if you started Turistas with, okay, everybody's captured and you're all like hose, boned.
There's a joy to the setup in the movies that are good that do that. There's movies that are bad, you're just kind of sitting around waiting for, you know, Jason to show up and kill people.
Right.
But in the movies that are good that do this, you enjoy the setup. And I wonder if there's a video game equivalent where we don't have to just get to the action right away. I wonder if there's gameplay devices that can be put into play where I am enjoying sort of being in this world and then that world is taken away from me and the game is flipped on its head and I am forced to defend it. I think that would be really interesting.
I agree with you. On the flip side, I think that Far Cry 3's intro does what it does very, very well, which is that, okay, here's the island thing and like... What? Where am I?
Yeah.
Oh my God! Right. Like, what the hell?
No,
holy shit! I gotta. Yeah. And then you're immediately motivated. You're immediately. You have context for everything, and it's really just because of this. You know.
I think we're not mature enough quite yet, as a whole, the audience, to do what you're talking about. Because if we get a shooter, we want to be running around shooting
pretty quickly
within a finite amount of time. We want to be, you know, running around with a gun in our hand, shooting things.
Yeah.
Even if there's other things to do, even if there's like all these other rich layers to it of character development and side quests and conversations and all those kind of things. At some point, we want to have an AK-47 and shoot things.
But I would totally play that game.
But it's kind of like what you described with BioShock Infinite, in that you kind of trained yourself at a carnival. You know, by shooting carnival games. So I think that's kind of the most I can think of that kind of sets you
up. Remember, we've had this discussion before about finding other ways to interact with worlds other than pointing a crosshair at something and pulling a trigger.
Right. And the only difference in this thought was just that, you get to shooting at a certain point, but it's not until after you've interacted with the game world in a different way.
See, like, one of the things I thought that was really great on a level about this beginning of Far Cry 3 is that it's just unbelievable enough to make it a great fantasy that I want to be in, but just believable enough that I'm hooked and rooted in the world.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean that like no one anticipates that your protagonist, who is not militarily trained should in any way, shape, or form be able to pick up an AK-47 and be able to aim down the sights and hit dudes that are 100 meters away.
He's got the warrior spirit, bro.
Regardless.
He has tattoos, man. He's getting ink done.
That's true.
But he's just...
And that's one of those things where you look at reality and where reality in video games and what's fun and what's sim.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have that uncanny valley of like, okay, well, really, you know,
riding that wave for the first couple hours. They are riding that wave to where I was right in it and I was like not caught up in like, this is ridiculous. I wouldn't be able to do this.
You have low health though. I mean, it's not like you're like this Rambo who can run through and not die. I mean, you only have two little bars when you start out.
Yeah. Right. Just like real people.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying.
Super realistic guys. You can get shot like 6 times and then get better.
With green leaves, hey, you can get
Rambo.
Better.
It's only a scratch.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's only a flesh wound.
I just wanted to name check Mirror's Edge because I think there needs to be more games like that made
But that's the only one that we go back to consistently.
I know.
That was able to do that.
That didn't work out because if that had been a new genre, like
I will say it again, Mirror's Edge with zombies. Yeah. Where you are running away from zombies.
Well, I think that one of the things that would be great is if designers were to really break down what worked about it. So some of the things that they did in Mirror's Edge were the use of glowing surfaces that gave you something as a player that you could latch onto and then interact with through the device, through the buttons on your controller. So you've got to give people something that with their control device they have in their hand, they're able to readily interact. You have to create some sort of interface, but hide the interface within the activity that's going within the scene. And it's so simple to do that with a gun because a crosshair appears on the screen and it's natural to pull the trigger. Right? We already like that makes cognitive sense. So you just have to like create more systems like that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of like bringing up systems, one of the things I was talking to Jeff about today that I thought was really cool about the beginning part of this game is that when they first introduced the 3-segmented character development system, they immediately broke one of my problems. And I love that they did this. So one of my problems is that I get, you know, totally like OCD about like once I pick my tree, I'm going to be in my tree. I'm going to min-max my tree, and that's the only tree I'm going to do. And this game is awesome because right off the bat, it shows you you don't have to do that. And matter of fact, we don't want you to do that. We want you to be diverse and think about things. There's 3 trees, and you get like, and you earn enough to do your first upgrade, and you're told, okay, go get an upgrade. And then immediately it says, okay, that was one. Now go get another one. But you can't buy another one in that tree yet. Mm-hmm. So you immediately are forced into buying something out of another tree. And right off the bat, you're like, oh, well, if I do this stuff over here. And you immediately start thinking, and I could do this. I understand. I could do this in any game. In any game that has multiple trees, I could easily look at all 3 trees. I could do this in Borderlands. Right. I could be, oh, I'm going to do a load in this. I'm going to do one of this. I'm going to do this. But I don't. I wind up starting in one and I'm like obsessive with, I'm going to get everything. I'm going to max it out. I'm going to get the top max. I'm going to get the top max as fast as I can.
Right.
But this immediately breaks that because it says, right, we're giving you one of these and we're giving you one of these too. And then you can figure out what works best for you. And that's super smart.
Well, and it does something also that with that skill leveling up system that I think it's clever from a big picture perspective, but a lot of people have been complaining about it, which is some of those skills are locked behind. You have to complete a certain mission.
It's rad. The prerequisites?
I really like it. I especially like the prerequisites that are like, hey, look, we're going to give you a takedown where you can basically, you know, take a guy's sidearm and, you know, shoot another dude with it or whatever, the grenade thing. But you have to do something before that. There's a prerequisite. The one I can remember off the top of my head is a heavy takedown. In order to be able to actually do a takedown move on a heavy, you have to kill a bull shark.
Yeah.
Of course you do. Punch him in the gills.
So it's like, yeah. But I mean, like having those, I know they're sort of, I mean, you break them down, they're a little contrived and sort of artificial. But in the context of the game world, you're like, okay, I need to go do this so I can earn my stripes and get this ability. Really works.
Or earn your tattoo.
Your tattoo.
All right, we're going to take down this segment, and when we come back on the other side, we'll talk a little bit more about Far Cry 3 and move on into other things as well. Stick around. We can confirm. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
TLC.
That's that awesome Destiny's Child song, right, guys?
TLC.
Damn it. I apologize to everyone. I'm ashamed.
By the way, Nicole was laughing at us, I think, for bobbing along.
I was. It was mostly judging you.
Excellent.
But...
excellent.
Thanks for clarifying.
Won't be the first time. Two things I want to say about Far Cry.
Number one.
Number one, it does economy better than most games. It's beautiful how...
Now, why, I haven't gotten very far in the game, so why do you like? What do you like about the economy?
Yeah, there's really not much there.
Really? Oh, I love it. It makes crafting worthwhile. There's beautifully wonderful
the economy
carrots on sticks.
In that you include skins and leaves?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
All the things that are have value.
That are tradable and doable.
And that you want to acquire. And that you want... It is beautiful in how... I want to make things, so I got to get things, so I need to have a bigger sack to hold more things, so I need...
So I can do more Coke, so I can make more money, so I can...
yes, exactly.
Do you ever see those 80s commercials? Yes. I don't really do Coke. I'm just making a joke.
Nor do you make a lot of money.
It's so beautifully tight, and I'm so motivated to hunt, I'm so motivated to do all these things, whereas a game like Assassin's Creed, for example, I can just ignore most of that stuff most of the time.
Okay.
It's completely forgettable, and in this
remember number two.
Yes.
Hunting... Yeah. Is nuts.
It's great fun.
Especially because you start off right off the bat, and Jeff described, like, Jeff last week says, oh, right off the bat, you hunt a boar. And I'm like, okay, so I get to the point, I'm like, oh, here's why I have to go hunt the boar. Hunting the boar is not as simple as it sounds when he says, oh, you just go hunt a boar. You're running around with a 45.
That bothers me, by the way. I wish, for a game that is, it takes so much pleasure in mapping your body movements to certain actions and making it seem realistic. Like, the fact that you run around pointing your gun straight ahead constantly seems stupid.
It's a first-person shooter. What are you going to do?
You can put a gun down.
They could do a tweak. They could do a tweak. And
put the gun
time
away.
Crisis
and
something?
Given how much full-body awareness is in that game, like, I would not put it past them to do something like that in a future.
I wish they had.
Time splitters. You want, like, time splitters where it's like...
You can keep the reticle up on my screen for as a gameplay device.
And when you click the button, your arm comes up.
Exactly. Oh, there are other games that do that.
Yeah.
I feel like Far Cry 2 did that, but I could be wrong.
Well, Far Cry 2, one of the only things that I really, really wish they had brought back over from that game that they didn't is the physical map that you get.
Oh, I know. Isn't that rad?
It was so awesome. You would actually look at your map and your dude would pull out a map.
Didn't Oblivion do that too? I think for Collector's Edition for Skyrim, you got one of those.
Oh, maybe.
No. He means in the game.
When you look at a map,
like,
you pull out
actual map that they sent you.
No, like, your dude actually pulls a map out and is like holding it.
Well, Far Cry 3 starts that way. It starts with you taking the map.
Right, but this is actually like, so you want to look at your map instead of hitting the back button and going to a map screen. You hit the back button and your dude reaches into his pack and pulls out, and you can still see like the peripheral area that you're in, and you can still get attacked by shit and like
super.
So you're like looking at your map and it's got a little compass on it. And
I like that it takes you out of it, so you have a minute to breathe and figure out what those goddamn Komodo dragons are.
My second point,
but it's hard.
Oh, go ahead.
So the hunting thing is actually there's really challenge to it, and that in turn. Is the next phase of them teaching you. Because before you deal with humans, you go to deal with the boar. And you realize very quickly, if you just come down there like dumbass me did and take a couple of shots at the boar, that A, you miss, and then the boar runs away. And now you're running all over the fucking island countryside chasing this goddamn boar.
And
there's
only like three in the area, so like if you mess that up, then like you're going to be running around for a long time.
Right,
you're trying to copious amount of boars.
I'm the moron that didn't want to waste bullets, so I'm like just swiping my knife. <out. laughs>
But you see what it's doing that's so perfect is it's teaching you how everything interacts. It's teaching you how if you make a lot of noise.
It's teaching you the circle of life.
Yes.
Anyway, I thought that was really ingenious, like ingenious in situ learning. Like you're right there learning it the way you need to in how it works. And eventually I was like, oh shit, you know what? I'm going to stop chasing this motherfucker and shut up and stand over here and be chill. And then I did that, and then like the boar goes back
to his
thing.
And then it trusted you, and then you killed it.
It did indeed.
I never trusted
and then I
him.
Skinned that bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but
because
well,
you needed
it's cool.
to, though.
So with that directly led to me.
And it moves us all.
It moves us all to get a better pouch for my shit.
For my syringes.
Yeah.
That directly led to me getting right back into what I remember being the way I played Far Cry 1, because I didn't play Far Cry 2. Already by the time I get to the first camp, and when I get to the first camp, instead of just like playing it like I would a shooter and running up and just like running in the middle of shooting everything, I'm like in the weeds, sneaking around the entire perimeter, scouting out where the dudes are, figuring out where the openings are that I can go through, seeing like where I might be able to throw a rock and distract somebody, slicing a dude's throat,
yeah,
and like playing very tactically right off the bat, using the cover, using the jungle, using the environment, and thinking, if I hadn't fought the boar, I probably wouldn't have done all that. I probably would have, especially having played the games I played of late, I probably just would have run into camp. And I'm sure that's a perfectly valid way to tackle it. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with doing it that way because you have a couple of other rebels with you. But it was so much more Far Cryzian for me to have done it the way I did it.
But the beautiful thing that I'm talking about with the economy, too, is that if you do, you know, try to liberate a camp, for example, and the shit hits the fan and you're like, oh my god, if I only had some more freaking ammo, or if I only had a second weapon I could have switched to, or if I only had...
I wished I'd had a second weapon.
And it's
weapon.
Like, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna fucking hunt some shit.
Well, I immediately went to hunt a holster up. You're exactly right.
Get ready. I'm gonna do the things I need to do to get ready. It's just so beautifully linked, like
exactly
a chain,
right.
Like a circle of life.
Because the very next thing I did...
Destruction. Man.
The very next thing I did was look for a goat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you can upgrade your holster.
Okay, so my second point that I wanted to make is, I don't think, forgive me, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, I don't think you brought this up last week, is how supremely brilliant the social aspects of this game are woven in. Did you mention that last night?
I may have touched on it, but I...
The social aspects.
You know how, when we were, you know, when Autolog hit the scene with whatever game was the first game to use Autolog, we kept saying, well, you know, this is so applicable in other genres, and when are these other games going to start using it? Far Cry 3 uses it, and it's awesome that I'll come wandering down the path, and I'll see this stone slab, and it's got my friend's gamer tag chiseled into it because he fucking owns that challenge right there, and it's in my world, in my game.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
I did not.
It's so rad.
I really didn't go into the Rocky Out challenges that much, but yeah, they're
so rad. Yeah, so rad. Really, and your wall, you know, which is, you know, this Facebookification of the world that's happening. But here, it's actually cool that when I turn on the game, I see all the things that my friends have been doing, and I kind of want to do better than they did, and it's got that Autolog compulsion aspect to it.
It does juice things, doesn't it?
When I was playing it, all the rocks had Ubi so and so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, of course.
Well, no shit.
Mine have fucking Fubar.
There's no way.
Goddamn Fubar.
He's so good. Fucking Fubar. Well, like, there's an aspect game that you might not be the same if you played it on PC. Just because Xbox has such a big community on there.
Oh, that's
and
good
I'm
point.
Sure your friend
True.
List is probably
sure
bigger.
I'm sure my Steam friends will be kicking my ass in certain ways, too.
Sure.
No one else is playing on PC, are they?
Mm-mm.
Damn it.
See? Whammy. It may look better, but
it's brilliantly integrated into my, like, it's my world, and now my friend's freaking name is chiseled into a piece of stone.
That is cool.
I like that it's chiseled in there, because if it was just a leaderboard that you had to interact with, it'd be easy to ignore.
Yeah.
But that's like they're mocking you. It's like, look what he did. Right. Look what you haven't done.
Zombie use solution there is also very cool.
I agree.
You can use spray paint and put signs on the walls, and then you find it when you're scanning with
sort
the
black
lightning.
Sort of the Dark Souls influence there. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, incidentally, I have a Wii U in my house now. Because Ariel got one for Christmas. We did early Christmas with her dad. And we got one for Christmas.
Awesome.
She got one for Christmas.
Did you get Zombie U?
She got Zombie U, yeah. She got Nintendo Land and Zombie U. And Zombie U is...
Nintendo Land's fun when you have people over.
So, yeah. Very so, fun. Actually, her sister was in town over the weekend. And we played a good bit of Nintendo Land. As a matter of fact, we almost exclusively played Zelda.
Zelda, really? Interesting.
You look surprised.
I didn't have
Which
that
Zelda?
Much fun playing that one.
You didn't.
I like
so there's
Mario
like a little
Chase
Zelda. There's
Metroid.
A little Zelda mini game. One of the mini games in Nintendo Land is the Zelda game, and one person plays as the archer with the pad, and the pad is like a view screen into the world that you play in for sort of virtual world where you hold it up to look around in 3D space and you launch arrows.
It's a target reticle, basically.
Yeah. And you launch arrows by pulling the stick on it down and letting it go and pulling it down and letting it go. And you're the one person who can provide cover, and the other two players play with the Wiimotes and are little walkers with little...
It's exactly the same as...
the sword and a shield.
Yeah, as the sword adventure mode in Wii Sports Resort. You know how you like it'll like control how you walk through the world, and you have to attack dudes as they come to you.
Right. Meh.
I didn't really play much of that, but I know what you mean.
Dude, by fifth or sixth level, it gets really cool.
It does get
multi-layered,
very hard,
and it's cool because it forces the people who are playing the walkers to play tactically with their use of the shield, because the shield, when you guard, you stop.
Right.
And while you stop, the person who's providing cover can move forward and continue to provide better cover spots for you. Hmm. So you kind of have to work back and forth so that you know how far you're advancing so that the other person can keep cover on you. But it's just, it was fun to play.
Yeah.
It was
But that's how all the Nintendo Land things are. It's like,
I don't think all of them are
really
successful.
This is really fun when there's four people sitting around, or five people sitting around, and which is, you know, how Wii Sports was too.
But yeah, I'm a little surprised that you ducked down on Zombie U, cuz it's pretty immersive. And you like immersive games.
I respect the hell out of it. I love it in theory. I just, the experience of playing it is stressful to the point of being not fun.
It's crazy intense.
Yeah.
It is really crazy intense. I mean, I have to tip the hat to them for what they managed to do as far as pulling off a Night of the Living Dead sort of crazy, seriously in jeopardy feeling.
Yeah. And not compromising on the roguelike aspects of it.
So what's like the closest corollary to, you know, something that's more people have probably,
I think, Dark, in the Dark past. Souls or
Amnesia, maybe?
It feels to me...
probably not. Not
it quite. Feels to me like a serious take on the original Dead Rising.
Mm.
Where saving and taking care of your character become very important.
It's like Dead Rising is so much about, like, improvising with weird weapons. This has none of that.
Well, not the first one. First one,
yeah. It's in a freaking mall.
The first one was like... Well, both of them are like beat the clock games. I mean,
I don't know. I just sort of got a similar sense of being in the environment and being in jeopardy. And
I feel like it's sort of Condemned meets a roguelike.
Condemned, definitely. Definitely Condemned.
Which is a game I love.
Definitely. Really?
But I love, yeah. I loved playing that game, but I also played it with another person in the room constantly, which is kind of how you have to play that game.
it's intense. It was definitely intense.
I liked both Condemneds. I thought they were... That's a franchise that needs to come back.
Hit him in the head with a pipe, dude! Hit him!
Yeah.
So
watch out behind you! There's a gun! It's a hobo!
You are attacked by hobos constantly in that game.
Watch out for his spindle!
The game where PR infamously PR sent out the pipe with the red paint on the end to look like blood. Yeah. So bad. So very bad. We got sidetracked on that. What was I going to...
You were talking about Nintendo Land.
No, before that,
Far Cry 3.
Nintendo Land and all that was a sidetrack from Far Cry 3, and I forget what I was going to wrap up Far Cry 3 with.
Oh, well, I want to say a few things about Far Cry 3 real quick.
Okay.
First off, the gun system. What is the deal with that?
What's the deal?
Okay, Your gun, obviously, is really important, and it really encouraged you to buy guns. Obviously, if you... free a radio tower area or
pro tip, don't buy guns.
You're
7.62.
You free it.
Full
you
metal free it jacket. Influence.
And then you get free guns, but you don't know that totally. And like, so for a while, I didn't have the upgraded wallet, so I bought this really sweet sniper rifle and I couldn't figure out how to use it.
You shoot with it.
Yeah. See, that's what I asked Twitter and I got a bunch of at replies. They're like, click. And I'm like, thank you. That's exactly what I meant. No, but you can't, if you buy a gun and you go to your hold down left trigger and you go to that wheel, you can't access your guns that way, which is how you normally access guns in games. There's no inventory for your guns. You have to find a safe area that has a gun store or like
all
a gun rack. But you have to find it. If you're in the middle of nowhere, trying to like Komodo Dragons.
You can fast travel.
If you haven't unlocked it yet and you're in the middle of an area and you need to snipe.
Jeff, don't be that guy.
I know, you're being that guy.
I apologize.
Yeah, but I felt it didn't explain well enough that you have to go back to pick your guns.
Did you read?
I'm going to be honest.
I'm sorry.
I did not read.
Disabled the HUD, obviously.
Disabled the HUD.
So sadly, I think that is one of the problems is it has this disparity between being immersive and teaching you so often through like what you're doing in the game, but then it'll throw
a window every 5 minutes for the first 3 hours playing.
It's like, and here's another dialogue box. Here's another dialogue. And unfortunately, it's also giving you, so the dialogue boxes are giving you like the
crafting tips,
the technical part of the owner's manual, and you're learning the practical part in the field, but then you're like, I know what I'm supposed to do, but how do I, where's the dimmer switch for my lights?
Yeah, well, the thing that bugs me is when it pops up with like, hey, read this snarky comment about the car you just jumped into. It's like, I don't want to read that snarky paragraph that you wrote about, well, this is a Datsun, and boy, it rolls.
Oh, you mean the ones on the right where it's like, you know, every time you do a new thing, yeah, it's like, oh, here's a
read the little
there's
snarky
so
paragraph
many
we wrote.
Of those.
Yeah, and none of them are useful. They're all just like flavor text.
True,
you know?
True. No, I mean,
see, Garnet.
But you no,
guys,
I agree.
But you guys are talking about like the.
But what I'm saying, Nicole, is that there are also a number of those dialogue boxes that
shouldn't
pop up,
be ignored.
Yeah, that pop up yeah. with yeah. technical stuff like here is how you do this. You do
yeah,
this to do this. You
this
do
game
this.
Did a very good job of holding my hand and teaching me. Like you said with the board, teaching yeah. me how to play this game. And in the beginning, when you throw the rock to distract the guard, it's teaching me how to play. And I felt like guns are a really big deal.
It would have been much
better
for the... It
didn't teach me how to do this properly.
Been much
and
better
I Googled
for the first
it,
NPC.
And lots of people had this problem.
Be much better for that first NPC to go with you to the gun shop and walk through, like, they explain the whole thing, because they've already gone to all the other steps. Then for them to put three dialogue boxes on there that say, do this, do this, do this.
It's...
See, or like when you go to your guns, it should say something, because it just wasn't obvious.
Okay, so the progression is you get into the town and Dennis is like, oh, go to the shop and buy a gun. You're like, all right, so you go to
Wait,
the
he's
shop.
He's not Russian, he's a...
or whatever.
That wasn't even that I wouldn't.
No,
I wouldn't
that was
say
like
was
some nondescript
it was spot on. Dennis.
Yeah,
it was spot on.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. So you go buy a gun and he's like, okay, now go hunt boar to make a holster, and you're like. Okay, so you go to hunt boar and you collect a bunch of plants and you kill a bunch of boar and now you can carry two guns. And
not you do not get to carry two guns that quickly.
Yeah, if you kill boars, you do.
Yeah, but you have to like unlock the holster. It's like not boar. It's like the first thing you unlock isn't the holster.
It's not. He's right. It's a larger bag.
Oh, yeah. Is it the goats?
The holster
then?
Is like a more
goats.
Native
goats.
Animal.
You have to go get the goats.
Damn you, goats!
That's why I said the first thing I did after this thing, I was like, I need to go get some goats. Gotta go kill some goats and pigs.
Hunting. And tapirs.
I love hunting in that game.
I thought I would hate it, because I'm one of those annoying people who like, oh, I'm in PETA. So, I don't know, I am. Vegetarian.
And then you're PETA like, oh, an endangered bird.
Yeah, I need to be able to store more money. Really, the beautiful birds make you a lovely wallet. But it actually motivated me to kill animals when I needed it and only when I needed it, except for obviously Komodo dragons, which are little bitches,
or when they're biting you. I mean,
and the dogs, like my pack is constantly full of dog meat because, which I don't know, had a dime for every time, but
there's a Fallout 3 reference somewhere.
But like they attack you constantly of any animal.
Total side note though, have you guys heard of my new band, Pack Full of Dog Meat?
I think it was Sack Full of Dog Meat.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's a little more metal that way.
They're a Toad the Wet Sprocket cover band.
third thing that I don't know if this is a third. I don't really know what my list is, but another thing that totally pissed me off about this game was that I played it on the PS3 and it crashed my PS3 and it knocked out the power downstairs twice.
Wait, it's not powerful.
Like,
power this game
legitimately
is.
Knocked
that
out the power. To be
definitely
fair,
definitely sounds like a Far Cry.
How does
3
it do
issue.
That?
It was I don't the PS3.
Someone at UBPR is like. Oh, dude, there's got to be some, like get Far Cry 3 and knock out the power in your block.
Knock out the power with Far Cry 3. That's right. There's an ad campaign, and I expect residuals. You can pay me a Mountain Dew.
Start Armageddon with Far Cry 3.
But, you know, it legitimately did. I'm playing on, like, one of the 60-gigabyte backwards compatible PS3, so it's pretty old. But still, I lost a lot of save time.
You know what's crazy? As much as I'm loving Far Cry 3, that's not my gaming obsession lately.
Hmm.
My gaming obsession... Guardians of Middle-earth.
Okay, that I really want to know about. But before we leave this, here's the thing. As high as people are, and we're going to talk about our game.
How high are people?
Well, in what state?
As high as people are.
By the way, congratulations, Washington. Yay, Washington.
I support you. And Colorado soon.
As up as we are on this, and we're going to have... I need to think about, and I would love to get those listeners' feedback on how we should do... We can like Shaq has an established protocol for doing Game of the Year. It's pretty well set as far as voting and all that kind of stuff. But we can confirm, like, we can do what we want to. So what would you guys
fortune teller
listen?
I think best game you've only played 2 hours of that's actually coming out next year. That's a category, right, guys?
Only if GTA 5 can be included in that list.
Yeah,
no one can see you. Like she's
we'll have the fucking
try again. It says try again.
Of course, it says try again. She's made one of those like folded paper.
Fortune
four square thing.
We told them like 2 segments ago about that.
Yeah, but I just used it to decide if Far Cry 3 was Game of the Year, and it came up try again. So
here's the short version that we can tackle later, and then we can tackle another show. Is that one of the challenges I think that all awards show face in for video games is that they're so tied to this whole best of mentality, and video game has become such a broad, broad swath of catch-all that it creates these ridiculous setups where we're trying to justify how Journey, The Walking Dead, and Assassin's Creed 3 are all up for quote-unquote game of the year. And it's just an absurd...
Yep.
It's an absurd categorization. Mm. And I don't have the answer yet.
I have an idea.
I
just thought of it.
Yes.
We pick the top, and I pick we because I'm a part of this.
You are.
Top 20 games, or I just any number, user submitted. And for each game...
Put them in a hat.
For each game, we pick what they're best at. Not picking one, which is best multiplayer, which is best game. We just tell each one what they're great at. It's like
every child's a winner.
It's like preschool. It's preschool judging.
I like the game of the year raffle idea better. Like you put them all in a hat, and you're like,
I think preschool judging has merit.
But okay, you know how you solve this problem seriously?
I'm trying to grasp that because
here's how you solve
that
problem.
Was serious.
The rest of the problem is that no matter how you try to take this broad section called video games and cut it up, you only make things worse by fragmenting it. If you do it by platform, then you wind up with these weird situations where you're like, well, this is a multi-platform game.
Yeah,
this
that's
is
stupid.
A, that
stupid.
Doesn't work. But if you do it by genre...
It's a bygone vestige of a bygone era.
If you do it by genre, it creates just as many problems because then you're like, well, does this game belong in action or adventure? Or is it shooter?
Yeah, action
or do
and
we do action adventure?
Is too
do we do puzzle?
Arbitrary.
Like, yeah. That shit doesn't work
let me
either.
Let me explain.
And then no one would break things up like that anyway. You can't imagine, like, what other field would you look at games or other media and say, oh, well, I'm going to vote on this because it's this genre or whatever.
This sounds really cynical, but I said this last week, and the more I thought about it after the show, I was like, yeah, you know, that's actually probably a pretty decent methodology is to break it down by MSRP. And basically be like, look, all the $15 games, you guys are getting compared against each other. All the $30 games, you guys are getting compared against each other. And yeah, you can have
a commercial.
But an episodic game.
It is.
The Walking Dead wouldn't have anything to compete against. It's episodic.
Well, okay.
I'm just saying.
You would have
there are flaws.
There would be. Yeah, it's not a. But what I'm saying is you have expectations. When you throw down a certain amount of, a chunk of change for a game, depending on how much it costs, whether it's a $60 box game or a. $15 downloadable or whatever, your expectations are already set to a certain degree. Now you may get a game.
That's fair.
You may get a game that's like, holy crap, this is worth way more to me than $15, or, holy crap, I can't believe I paid $60 for this. But it's the only common denominator across the industry, the only common segmentation criteria.
What were you gonna say, Jeff?
I don't think that's a bad idea, but let me present, rather than a solution, let me present
a problem.
A philosophy.
Okay.
A falafel.
A falafel. Let me present some food for thought. What if the question that we ask ourselves in trying to solve this problem isn't, what's the best way? What's the fairest way? What if we ask ourselves, what way is most fun?
I like that.
Because... what's the point of doing a best of the year? The whole point is to create some sort of fun result, right? Which is why best categories and best platform, all that's bullshit because that's not answering the fun question.
Well,
What's the fun question? The fun question that is answered by best of lists is, in your opinion, which did you like the most?
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So, that's the juicy, fun question is, what was number one in your mind?
But I think we also want to recognize the excellence that's been created in our field, or in the field, right? In the field of video games. You want to recognize these great contributions to the history of video games.
Sure.
Because it's just like film or music or anything else.
Then the categories we have now kind of fill that.
But I don't think that's the thing. I don't think
what if your category is best contribution to the video game medium?
That's interesting. I like that.
But
Journey would ruin that, because Journey would win that.
Why is that ruining it? That's called winning it.
Not ruining it, but it wouldn't be a competition for any other game.
Well, that's because there's a clear winner. That's awesome.
Yeah, but I just don't know if that's the best category name. Because I feel like from 2012, not one game made an impact.
What?
In that category, you're saying... Artistically, which one game is historically affecting
video
games?
Well, you inserted the word artistically. I didn't say that.
What was the question?
Which had the biggest impact on the medium?
Oh, well, then I wouldn't say Journey for that one.
Well, you could.
Yeah, you could, absolutely.
Because now we're having the fun discussion
but
we want.
But then, but then you get into defining impact, right?
Sure.
So, like, you know, did it sell the most? And obviously that's a huge impact. Or was it, like, the most artistically awesome? And that's a personal impact.
I think that you ask your audience, what's the fun discussion that you want to have? Do you want to say – because, I mean, honestly, when we used to do this on TRS, may God rest its soul – we would literally eat, the three of us would come in with our top five, and our top five were gaming experiences that you had this year, and it didn't matter the size, the price, the scope, the platform. It was, what is your top five experiences? And then we tried to come to some sort of consensus, and almost always that wasn't the first game on any of our lists. It was this the one game that was like third or fourth or second
but everybody
had a great experience with it. So I'm not saying that's what we should do here. I'm just saying that was our approach in trying to answer the question, what makes for the most fun discussion? And I think for my money, that's what I come to these lists for, is
discussing
the fun.
Well, sure. There's a great deal of fun around the reception of the awards process and discussing the nominees and all that kind of stuff. But DevSword suggested that we break it down into three categories: best AAA game, best downloadable game, best iOS Android game.
That's kind of what Jeff said. Yeah.
And then come at it with special categories to do all the rest that catch the things that would
so
be
that
like,
all the games, like Nicole wants, all games get an award.
Yeah, they're all special in their own ways.
Writing, direction, art design, tech performance, that sort of thing. But then this is interesting. It says that I think a good barometer for sorting games in general might be how much data they use, the amount of sound or the resolution of art assets.
Sort of there. Best how use much data of data. Use.
No, but if you think
maybe
about
Star
it,
Trek.
What he's
best
saying,
gigabyte in a game.
No, if you use that as a categorization tool, like the taxonomy of games would then be divided by how big are the resources for this game. Is this a game that
how
has
much money went into it? That's fair. But that
to
kind
a degree,
of
that's what
AAA.
Like, although if you were a small team and labored at it for forever, you could get to be a giant game. But I'm just, you know, it's be like something like an Assassin's Creed or a Far Cry 3 has these huge, huge amounts of art assets and music and animation and all this stuff that went into it, versus a Journey that has, you know, a much smaller
footprint.
Yeah.
See when I think when we're, you know, I sort of, and this is sort of goes back to the MSRP thing for Game of the Year, but what you guys were talking about. I think that there are the potential for some other interesting categories that sort of address that fun aspect. Yeah. Like, what was the best villain that you encountered, you know, in a video game this year?
I like that.
Or what was the, you know, who was the most compelling protagonist?
Or which game did you spend the most hours playing?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great one.
I like that. I like this much
for
more.
For the fifth year in a row, World of Warcraft.
And at some point in time, you know, right. Somewhere in there, yeah, you get to these big things that are like Game of the Year for AAA, Game of the Year for indie downloadable. But then you also have all these other cool discussions about all these other things. It's not like the Oscars are just Best Picture. They're Best Picture and Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor and Best Director and then all those other things.
Best sound design.
The only devil's advocate I'll play on that idea is that you get into this sort of janky clown shoes MTV Music Awards version of
we don't want to do that.
Best on-screen kiss using robot penis, you know.
Can
that be a category?
Yes.
Which of course would
But like
be
any other editorial endeavor.
But some of those quirky categories are fun because they generate a discussion about like, oh yeah, I remember that moment kind of thing.
Well, and they're all experience based, right? So if you say what's the best villain, it's like, why is that the best villain? Well, because I hated him, or because he scared the crap out of me, or whatever. And it's like, it gets down to why you liked the game in the first place.
All right, so you guys out there who are listening, come over to the boards, fill out the forums, give us some response on how you'd like us to slice things up. You got about a week while we try to figure out what we're going to do in the big show. And we have one more segment to wrap up. We will do Guardians of Middle-earth, because Jeff's obviously excited about that.
It's awesome.
And we have the November NPDs, which, although we won't belabor, have some interesting things to talk about the future of next year, as well as what's happening here at the close of 12. So stick around. We'll be right back to wrap up Week in Confirmed.
Yeah. All right.
Nicole is sad-catted. She's sad-kittied.
No. I was like, I'm a mouse.
Sad mouse. She's sad.
Yeah.
She's sad.
I was sad mousing it. Yeah.
Apparently, because there is a version of that song.
There is a version of What a Man about Mickey Mouse, mm-hmm. and it was on a collection of rap songs my parents bought me called Mickey Mouse Unwrapped, and it was
this year.
No, this no, it wasn't. It was like 93. I was young. I was a youngin.
This year?
No. So that is my sadness.
Mickey Mouse Unwrapped.
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Check it out, kids.
He's gangsta.
So
what other songs was Mickey Mouse?
I only remember that one.
Really?
That's yeah, the only, but there was a whole album to it, and I had one of those like little play school cassette thingies where it came with like a microphone with like a curly cord like connecting to it. I don't remember what that's called anymore. What is that? You know how phones that used to be attached to the phone?
You're making things up.
What was that cord called?
Phones that used to be attached to the phones and the wall.
Phone keyboard?
Yeah, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
A cord?
Whatever.
A phone cord.
So yeah. It had one of those like curly cords that connected to it, and it had this like little microphone, and I could sing along to it.
You don't remember any of the other songs? Like,
no.
Pluto Can't Touch This?
No.
Pluto.
Oh, God.
That's all I remember. I'm sorry.
I was actually thinking this whole time. I've been trying to think. I'm like, oh, yeah, how can I turn Me So Horny into a Donald Duck reference?
God.
Nope.
Me So Lacking Pants? I don't know.
How many people remember Waterfalls more as the Al Yankovic song anyway? So
it's better. Most of the Al Yankovic songs are better than the originals.
You're not mad. All right,
Your Pitiful is a million times better than Your Beautiful. It's the best vocally. Like, that is an achievement that people need to realize.
And Amish Paradise.
White and Nerdy is way better than
whatever the other one was. Oh, Right and Dirty. Yeah.
And Amish Paradise. You can't beat Amish Paradise.
Yeah. So great.
Well, yeah. Listen, we're all of an age where we can appreciate Weird Al Yankovic.
I'm turning in my nerd card because those songs that you just referenced are post.
Oh, post when you were into him?
Yeah.
So you're like fat and eat it.
Take
and
a look at my wife and realize she's very plain, but that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity.
So
at 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows, Jebediah feeds the chickens, and Jacob plows, fool.
See,
but I've been plowing him. Okay,
I did. I think the album with Amish Paradise on it was the last one that I purchased.
It's so good.
It's all about the Pentiums. I think that's on the album.
That's on there. Anyway.
Anywho, video games.
Weird Al is awesome. Just deal with it.
He is. Guardians of Middle Earth is also awesome.
Dr. Demento.
Oh. And I will also say there's a line in The Hobbit where they go, "We are guardians of Middle Earth," or "I'm another guardian of Middle Earth." And I was like,
Guardians of Middle Earth. I play that. You really like this
I'm
game.
Impressed that you can make that noise. Wow.
That's my little schoolgirl voice.
What happened to you that you really like this game so much?
I have fallen in love with MOBA. Me and MOBA, or arts games, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, you read the forums.
I like arts, but it's never going
to
catch on.
I have to say,
MOBA's the term.
Big propers to John W. 188, who wrote a very deep examination of Dota 2 that I thought was really cool, because instead of just breaking down the game mechanics, he actually talked about how Dota in general is done, what the player base is like, what effort Valve has put
into
making the game. And that was really cool. Was
and I promptly signed up for the Dota 2 beta, and I'm eagerly awaiting my invitation.
He can probably get you a code.
I would like that. I downloaded League of Legends and played it for all of 10 minutes and was like, I'm going to go back to Guardians of Middle-earth because I like playing with the controller, and I really, really dig the game. And Alex Albrecht and I have been playing it. Like,
good enough that I should get it and play with you?
Dude, I would love that.
I'd get it.
It's 15 bucks.
But the thing that I don't like is I was reading that it's 15 bucks, but then they're also doing microtransactions on top of that? Did I understand that correctly, or is it in-game
economy? It's in-game economy.
Okay, so you're not nickel and diming me
and the really cool thing is what they've been doing is these weekly I mean, the game's only been out a few weeks, but
it came out today.
Earlier.
You've had preview code. It came out.
No, it came out Wednesday.
It came out this week. It came out on the 5th.
Yeah, I've had it for a while now. And they've done weekly featured guys. So even if you don't own them, if they're featured, you can play as them. So you can even decide.
So they're pulling the League of Legends idea, but they're using a virtual currency, not real money.
I would be surprised if they're not going to eventually have you pay real money for virtual currency.
Isn't it also on console?
It is only on
console. That's going to be a problem with microtransactions. They're not really built to support that yet.
Well, they can do that.
Well, not as well. I mean, I guess you could buy point packs. But it's not like a PC where, like, oh, I want this sword. I can buy this sword.
Right.
You'd have to buy point pack and then have that point pack be into the game.
Well, you could... theoretically, you could just buy gold in the game, couldn't you?
Well, I don't think the console, at least Xbox, isn't set up to be able to...
Yeah, the in-game...
Just straight up.
Anytime you buy in-game currency for anything... Well...
It's the MS points.
You are buying Microsoft points. And right. There is no, like... Shortcut but you could like doing that.
You have to drop out of the game to buy packs.
You could
stuff.
Just buy. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it, but you could buy characters.
They could
or
have
whatever.
An in-game interface where you go, "Oh, I want to buy a character," and then it pops up the, "Do you want to buy 2,400 Microsoft points?"
Yeah, think about it. I haven't seen anything where it asked me for real money yet.
It pulls up that ugly blade interface in Xbox whenever you do anything that's like microtransaction related. Not micro, but transactionally related.
But I've discovered what the whole world has known for years now, which is MOBAs are super fun, and I love them, and I'm hooked. I'm hooked.
So what about
I didn't really
want
to play League of Legends anymore just because I love the controller interface that they built for this game so well. I really dig controlling my guy directly rather than clicking on a place for him to run to.
So it's one-to-one map. So when you're controlling your guy, you're running the stick. You're using the stick to run around the world in analog. Yes. That's nice.
It's great. It's great. And MOBAs are built to where you have four special attacks anyway, and you have four face buttons, so that works out perfectly. And they've done this really smart thing where you press it in to ready it and change your target reticle to whatever the action-specific target reticle for that ability is. And then when you release the button, it goes off.
Hmm.
So you depress it to sort of target things up and you move your stick.
So you're aiming with the left stick then?
Yeah.
Okay. That's...
You're aiming and moving and, you know, you've got this sphere around you that has a target in it and it's sort of, you point your guy the direction he walks and the target goes that direction as well.
No, I just brought that up because I can't even remember what I was playing, but there was some genius game that had required you to use the right analog stick and press the buttons at the same time. And I was like, what the fuck are you guys trying to make me do?
Yeah.
Like, anyway, I don't remember what game it was, though.
It's a blast. It's a blast. The character designs are great. The graphics are great. I mean, it's
how much does the Metal Earth underpinnings have to do with your excitement for it?
Sound like he's in Metal Earth.
Metal Earth.
That's extreme.
Gollum. I have to admit, probably a fair amount.
I mean, like, do you get to be Gandalf and Strider and...
James Hetfield. Yeah.
You can Aragorn, Gandalf, Galadriel, Gollum are all in the game now. There's no Bilbo or Frodo yet, but I'm sure those will be added. And there's a lot of, like, deep lore guys. Like, my favorite character right now is Thrain, son of Thror.
Of course. He's, as everyone knows.
Tight-knit family.
He's my favorite go-to guy. But there's, like, a lot of, like, deep orc lore dudes. And Sauron is in the game, who's badass to play. And there's all these different character types, and they're very... I mean, anybody that knows about MOBAs will probably feel like this is all redundant and where have I been all my life. But for me, it's all very thrilling, and I'm getting into this world, and I feel like the accessibility of the controller input, the... relative freshness of the community makes it really fun. There's, I think, only one map right now, so it's easy to learn. And
I mean, that's a staple of MOBAs is that there's map.
I take that back. There's two maps. They do single lane.
That's
so
interesting.
Most MOBAs don't do that. I played a little bit of that. It's a little too intense for my blood. It's just such a battle of attrition that there's fewer strategies, I think, because you're just sort of beating each other down. You're all in the same pack and just going at it. Whereas, with the three lane stuff, you can sort of strategize.
Right.
I'm at that point, the holidays, my girlfriend's out of town on business. I want that game that I think about when I'm not playing it. I want that. It's so rare for me to have that like addiction game. And Far Cry 3 is kind of that, but Guardians is really that, where I'm like, oh, where can I need that juice. I need to get on. I need to play. And I know there's a lot of people that have that with Dota and with League of Legends. And maybe this will be my gateway drug to those big boy versions.
You're thinking about like just tactics, like, okay, if I'm playing Gandalf, here's what I'm going to try next time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go for this skill first.
Yeah,
I'm going to put this in my belt first. And
it's so fun playing with Alex and I have been playing together. And, it's fun having team strategies and going, okay, you throw your stun, root that guy. I'm gonna unload all my big attacks on him. Or we're both going, top lane. Let's work on that. It's all these things that I know people have been preaching at me for a long time that I would love these games, and I've been like, eh, yeah, yeah, but I'm intimidated
by the team sport element.
Yeah.
It's the team sport element of playing games like this.
So equate the feeling you get when you're – because I'm sort of where you were like, you know, before you
– A month ago.
Yeah, before you took the plunge, because it's always been something where I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks really cool, something that I – looks really deep and intricate that I have absolutely – no time to learn how to play.
Yeah.
So how does it compare to that? I mean, like, what sort of itch does it scratch for you?
Well, it's a really fun compressed role playing game experience in the sense that you are leveling from 1 to 15 in 20 minutes, and so you level fast, you get new abilities quick. It's fun to get experience points. And there's real strategy. I just destroyed something. There's real strategy in the PvP aspects of it are thrilling because you're it's got that sort of fighting game aspect of I got mine off, or I'm chasing a guy around the bushes and my buddy trapped him, and then we threw down our abilities all in a row and killed him, and that was
so it's I mean, the social aspect is a huge part of it, or playing cooperatively or whatever.
Okay. Which is impressive that you can say that before it even went gold. Not gold, but before it went public for everyone to play. Like, even when there probably was a limited amount of people on the servers, you still had an amazing time playing it.
That's a great point to bring up, because that was one of my big worries, was because Alex and I would get on and we'd be like, he and I on a team and like 3 AI dudes, and then one other person on the other team and 4 AI dudes.
So it's 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Okay.
And or maybe it's 6.
Regardless, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But the point is that pre-release, it was like we were lucky to get another human at all. And it was all, journalist types. And I was worried.
Wow.
Gross.
No, not that. I'm just saying that, like,
they didn't have any clue what they were doing.
It wasn't 12-year-olds yelling F-bombs.
It wasn't. Yes, exactly. I was worried that once we got into the general pool, and it was all people, that it was like, oh, the fun gets shut off. Like, now it's just frustration and death. And
now it's intense. It's like, Jeff, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, Alex and I stay in party chat, and we don't even, which probably pisses people off, because it's like, why are you guys not in the right lane? But we're like, we're doing our own thing.
Oh, you're those people.
Yeah.
I always stay in the party.
So you're still clearly doing it wrong.
Clearly, but we're having a blast. It's fun. Yeah. And it really is fun with full teams of people. And I would say for anybody looking to dip their toe in that hasn't tried it before, try Hildefons first. The Fons is your buddy. He's the coolest. I think he's super easy, accessible. His attacks are really clear, and they make sense. And he's a tactician. I think tactician is the name of it, what he is, and which basically means he's best attacking towers instead of other guardians. And I found him to be an easy guy to sort of learn the ropes with, because he survives pretty well, and you can sort of just attack the towers and the other peon dudes and stay out of the fray, and he doesn't have a lot of support abilities where you're relying on teamwork to get you through. You can sort of solo him a little bit better, and then you can move on to the other guys when you get a little bearing on how he goes. But they all play very differently from each other, and it's really fun.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah,
it's funny whenever I listen to hear somebody describe MOBAs, because I don't really play them. That's the thing that turns me into Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, because I'm just like, I don't get what you're saying, nerds.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's part of the appeal, though. It's getting in there, and
it's fun. It's fun. I'm
all right. I will give it a whirl.
Please do.
They say a whirl, because whirl, I've got time up. Coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had the longest year, but so now we're getting down to the end of the year. I have a bunch of unused vacation time, so I'm going to burn a bunch of it.
I have like 3 months of vacation time. So
hey, unemployment. High five.
Yeah.
Nicole and I are going to do our awesome show together that we're going to start
up.
Yeah, let's do it.
You didn't respond to the text message, man.
Well, it's happening.
Data plan,
it's gonna happen.
I get it.
It's going to happen.
I want to know about this awesome
I'm
show.
I'm excited.
We're going to make a show, unless people don't want that. But
they probably do.
Sure.
I need something to do.
Let's do something.
Yeah.
I need something to do.
Yeah.
Granted, neither of you are going to get paid for it.
That's okay.
I'm out.
That's just a matter of time.
First, so... I made a mistake and did not print out the news, so I don't have the NBD figures in front of me, but I'm going to wing it because I seem to remember most of them.
Make them up.
Can I eventually say how cool Omega and Dragonborn are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course. Go ahead.
All right now. Oh, I don't want to do the news. Okay, I'll be quick. Okay, so I've been playing Mass Effect 3 Omega, which is the new single-player DLC for Mass Effect 3. And even though I had my issues with Mass Effect 3, especially the ending, and it sucked, I really like Mass Effect 3 Omega. It kind of takes place, obviously, before... If you beat the game, it's going to spit you back out before you attack the Cerberus base. And it's a kind of confined mission, so you're not going to take any of your crew with you, which I imagine is so they have to pay the voice actors. And so it's... who is it? It's the girl from Omega. What's her name? Oh, my God. The Asari?
Arya?
Arya, yeah, Arya. And the first female Turian, which is amazing, but they don't address the fact that you've never seen a female Turian ever. They do not acknowledge that she is the only one, the first time you've ever seen her. How does the race continue to be alive if there's only one? They don't address any of that.
How do they differ? Does she have like a boobies. Pink bow?
She's way hotter.
Pink bow.
She's less catfish like. there's less like prongy things from her mouth. But she's still Turian looking.
She looks more like a squid than a catfish.
No, because squid are more reapers.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a different kind of fish. Fish cat, but not a catfish. There's a big difference.
Clearly.
Look it up.
Dogfish.
So, I didn't like, I'm not going to say how it ended. I thought it was a great DLC. There's a ton of cutscenes, and in between cutscenes, it's just tons of action, and I enjoyed it. So if you are a Mass Effect fan, you should definitely check it out. I'm also playing Skyrim Dragonborn. I'm not letting you guys have any opinions here. I'm just going to talk and
keep going.
Yeah. So I'm playing Skyrim Dragonborn, and it's less of a DLC in the way Dawnguard was. It's more of an expansion. So you're not really having missions in Skyrim. This all takes place in this other place called like Solstheim, which is, I guess, an island in Morrowind. Hmm. And so it's mostly dark elves, and this land is covered in ashes, and you're getting lots of new quests. And kind of the main conflict is this ancient dragonborn who's a Dovahkiin like you, has been awakened, and he was around when Alduin and the other dragons were kind of wreaking havoc, you know, millions of years ago, and he's been awakened, and he's causing problems, and he's possessing the people of the island, and I actually haven't beaten it yet, so I don't know how that's going to play out. But here's my problem with this part of the expansion is that there's nowhere for you to sell your items because you get so much good loot and it's really heavy and you get over encumbered and it happens. It happens all the time. And I give things to Serena because I keep Serena as my partner. And I don't know why you guys are laughing. This is all completely valid. So it has no shop, so you can't sell your stuff, so you have to go back to Skyrim to sell things. And they didn't record new dialogue for Serena, so she keeps saying, this must be the awesome Skyrim weather we've been talking about. And, like, you're not in Skyrim, Serena. So. I think it's only $20, and you should definitely check it out.
We all heard that, right?
I don't know, it was so funny. No, that was great.
No, it was great.
Thank you for powering through that.
That was the short version, man.
I'm pretty sure the engineer, Micah, was giving us a little sound effects in our
ear holes. I was like, which one of you guys just ripped one?
That was awful.
Sorry, we apologize. That was excellent info.
I know.
That the audience, I'm sure, appreciated.
I'm well aware.
And we all just heard a farty noise.
In our ear holes.
I think there's something wrong with me because.
Let's talk about it.
Gastrointestinally? Because that explains it. Really? Something.
I didn't hear anything. I was talking a lot.
It was really
so I didn't
strange.
Really hear anything. Like,
when was
that noise?
10 years old for laughing at it, but it was so funny.
The funny part was like I heard it, and then I looked and I saw Jeff had definitely heard it, and then
well,
I looked
I'm
over at Garnet.
We're all laughing.
Garnet heard it, and I was like, "Well, now it's fucking real."
I thought you guys were laughing at me, so I feel much better now.
No, you are awesome for powering through. I appreciate that. You're a true lady,
and we're glad you were actually speaking then, because none of us would.
We would have all been melting.
Yeah.
I'm actually curious about how all of these, what the future is for these giant DLC packs. I'd really love to know how they are doing for publishers like Bethesda and EA who are still continuing to do them.
They must
because
be doing well.
You were a huge Skyrim fan and a huge Oblivion fan. And I remember you doing the Oblivion add-ons much more than you seem to be doing the Skyrim
ones. I'm doing this one. I downloaded it already. Okay. It's my next week. I'm in on this one. This is the first one. I just didn't give it crap.
Did you
really
finish
about
the main
vampires.
Quest in Skyrim?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Like, I didn't do everything. My plan was to do everything.
Yeah, like but you finished the main quest. That's cool.
Yeah, but I wanted to do everything, and I haven't yet.
And like Mass Effect 3, as much as I liked that game, I'm just not inspired to go back there because of the way the... I guess
the,
because
the
farther ending,
away
or...
I get from Mass Effect 3, the less I liked it.
That's a shame.
Yeah. No,
that's
I mean,
really a shame.
Nothing can change how I felt when I finished the game, and the way I felt was just... I don't want to say betrayed because that's a little dramatic.
But let down.
Well, yeah, really let down. And it was a feeling where I don't want to play this again. It wasn't like after Mass Effect 2 where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to play Mass Effect 1 again so I can play this again. I didn't have that feeling. So that's why Omega made me excited because it kind of made me forget those pains, you know?
That's a great thing.
Yeah. But that crappy ending's still there.
What is that?
That is weird. It was back again. Jeff and I both looked at it. Yeah. It was back again.
No,
the weird noise.
There's some sort of weird.
Maybe it's feedback. Maybe it's feedback.
Feedback.
Maybe it's feedback. I hope you guys who are listening are not having to hear that. It's really weird.
I know. I mean, I know I do occasionally do Foley here, but that's not me.
So
I'm not hearing anything.
So NPDs, you're gonna make them up.
Let's talk the numbers.
Quick recap because we're gonna get to the out. We still have football to do.
Yeah.
Black Ops 2, unsurprisingly, the big winner.
$1 billion.
And for all the people who were skeptical of how it was doing and off the pace, it hit $1 billion faster than
billion
$1 billion. So and then all anybody can do to shoot holes in that is come up with anecdotal evidence of, well, maybe it's not doing as well. And when the empirical evidence is it got to $1 billion faster than any other title.
Which doesn't include digital distribution numbers. I don't know if you can download it, but like it doesn't.
You can get it on Steam if you're on PC.
So then, yeah, it doesn't count that. Which is my thing with NPD is like, why can't we count digital numbers
yet?
Well,
it's becoming less and less relevant because of that. Because mobile and digital.
It is becoming less relevant. I mean, we haven't talked about it much. So, I mean, it's just interesting here because it was November. And December will be interesting just to get a sense of, because a lot of people are out in stores buying games.
Oh, yeah. No. And to that point, I think that that's still plenty relevant about certain things. I just think in terms of the larger picture that it provides on the gaming, you know, industry overall, they're looking at
missing a chunk.
Yeah, they're looking at an increasingly smaller part of the pie.
It's absolutely missing a chunk. It's still the majority,
yeah,
but it's missing a chunk. Mm-hmm. But you can't argue with the other part piece that came out of this, which is how dominant a November Microsoft had again. Dude. So Halo 4 comes in second overall, beating out Assassin's Creed 3, which I thought was pretty impressive because Assassin's Creed 3 even had, besides having a big launch, besides having a bunch of PR behind it, was on sale at a lot of places over Black Friday. I mean, they made a seriously concerted push to sell a shit ton of Assassin's Creed 3.
And they did.
And it was multi-platform.
And it's multi-platform, and it still fell shy of where Halo 4 came in. Xbox hardware...
Does that surprise you?
Halo's a big time franchise.
Hey, Halo's huge.
Xbox hardware almost doubled up all the other consoles combined, even with a new launch. Okay, so Wii U did 425 million. They say
that
425,000. They say they were limited, although it seemed to a lot of folks around America like you could go and buy one we wanted to. They did another 400,000 Wiis, so it's ridiculous how much that's still selling.
Yeah.
And you look at that, and then you got PS3, you have everything else. Like, that's amazing that at one, they did, like, it was 1.26 million 360s sold. And something like half of the dollars spent on software went to Xbox 360 software. It's absurd how big a advantage they have built in North America. And that's really huge for them going into a next console cycle. Because so far, it's not been a lock by any stretch of the imagination that you carry over. Everyone struggles to carry over. And, you know, Microsoft now has to face this same challenge of how do we translate the success that we've had into success in a next generation.
Yeah, because on one hand, they have the brand loyalty, which obviously people love Microsoft. Yeah. They love their Xboxes.
They have Live.
Potentially, although I doubt we're going to see it, but potentially the next Xbox console could have backwards compatibility. But so many people have an Xbox. What can they launch that's going to compel them to ditch that console to pick up a new one?
The next one.
Yeah, like, what's it going to have that people are going to say, well, my Xbox 360 can't do that?
It's a big question. I agree. It's a really good question. I think it's going to be built into services. I think Sony faces the same thing as well. Services, you know, integration with social graph, integration with all the other things you're doing out there in the world. So rest of the top 10 was filled up with a lot of sports titles. Sports titles, again, doing great at Christmas time.
Great during the holiday. I have many family members who it's like, what do I get that cousin? Oh, we'll just get a Madden. And okay, Madden.
Unsurprisingly, Skylanders in top five, finished up in number five. The only other thing that I remember that stood out to me really strongly was that Vita had its second best sales month since its launch. And by doing some fudging of estimations based off of statements that PR people made, where it's like the X number more than this and X number more than that, it's been narrowed down to doing like somewhere around 215, 220,000 units.
That totally makes sense to me. I mean, if you're gonna have a bump for that device, it's going to be the month before Christmas.
That's not enough to stay in the game.
No, it's not.
But
I mean, that's why they
even
got
and they've got great bundles. They've had a lot of incentives out there. Like, I don't know what to tell them to do with Vita. I've been a champion, not a champ. I guess I haven't been a big champion, but I've been a supporter of Vita. I think it's a cool piece of hardware. I think there's a number of great things they can do with it down the road, especially with whatever that new console is that they have coming. But they have to find some way to at least get the damn thing on life support to make it a viable platform. They've got to do something to get it on life support and push it forward. So, you know, and I'm excited because one of the games I'm going to be playing in the next couple of 3 weeks is Persona. And I'm really looking forward to playing it on my Vita.
Everybody on my Twitters.
And I've got me too, man.
I got the Jet Set Radio on there as well. The same
people. Yeah.
That Persona 4 Golden is like, that is the one game on, and it's... I can't remember the last time or if I've ever bought a system based on one title.
And you buy it for that?
Pretty close. That's hours and hours and hours of game. And I never finished it on PS2.
I mean, look, if you're selling that view, it's time to lower the price. It's time to be aggressive. It's time to do something to get...
If you're selling that view, is it time to call it quits and give up handhelds?
Well, Sony, as Andrew was telling me as we were talking about it, Sony likes to make things and put them out there. They make devices and put things out there. They, I mean, they've put the device out there. They're not going to abandon it. So they need to figure out how to shore up the situation until they can bring out their new device, their new home console, and find ways
to make it
more interesting.
Sony phone called? Xperia Play?
The phone.
So they still have their phone. Their phones...
How did that do? Because I feel like that's... In my head, how do you make the Vita work if you make it a phone as well?
Keep in mind, they've moved into PlayStation Mobile, and PlayStation Mobile is a huge initiative for them through the Android operating system, in which they're bringing a ton of PlayStation power to bear, both in bringing games into the PlayStation space and supporting development on PlayStation phones. So that's a big thing for them, because they bought the Ericsson line, and now they have the ability to run PlayStation Mobile on their own hardware. It's a big deal. All right, let's do finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
I love that one. Jeff Mattis, what's your finishing move?
My finishing move is, so Vice City came out for iOS yesterday, if you're listening to this on Friday, and it is actually pretty good. I will qualify that with, if you played Grand Theft Auto 3 on iOS, it feels, for some reason, slightly better, although the controls are fairly similar.
Virtual sticks?
Yeah, but they've done some tweaks, so you can do stuff like use, instead of left and right buttons for driving, you can do an analog stick for driving. But so it's not perfect.
Sticks.
But I will tell you, and
that was you.
That was me.
And I knew going into this that, like, I wouldn't be, oh my god, this is the best thing ever. But I love Vice City. It's probably a port of the PC version because the textures seem higher res than it's definitely higher res than the PS2 version, but it looks like a port of the PC version. Very sharp, some, you know, slight graphical updates, full soundtrack in there. It's just pretty awesome to have Vice City in your pocket or iPad or portable device. It's pretty cool.
I thought you were just happy to see me.
Nope, that's Vice City.
On the iOS tip, I grabbed Walking Dead Assault right off the bat for my iPad, primarily because it looked very... I liked the art style. Like, it had like comic style to it. It looked really cool. And I have to say, the game is totally not working for me. And I'm surprised, because I thought I would love it, especially because I love, sort of tactical action role-playing games. But it's just... It's sort of... Really, summing it up, as I told Jeff, it's boring me. It's just boring me. You have the Walking Dead characters from the TV show cast into very small little environments in which they run around and have to eliminate all of the zombies that are in the area. and you use, you know, it's a nice enough interface. You touch one of them and touch some, double tap someplace, they move there. If you just hold down in the space in the environment, then all of your guys move there together. You have a primary weapon and a secondary weapon. You have like a health system. You're like a little set of upgrades and stuff. But I mean, I really found it to be as boring as, oh, I'm on a street. I push someplace. I watch my guys go there. There's no actions to attacking. You have range rings for each of your weapons. And as zombies move into the range ring, then your guys just auto attack. And so you're just kind of milling your guys around and tactically moving the ones with longer ranges to where they can cover the guys with shorter ranges and get as many overlapping circles as possible so that you have the most damage ability. And
can I interject one thing?
Sure.
I had a kind of a similar experience. Three or four missions into the game, I started getting my ass kicked. And it was basically because there's a noise mechanic in the game.
Yeah.
Basically. So
I say that there's a noise meter on the left-hand side.
Yeah, so you like shoot guys, and if you shoot too many zombies, like the noise meter fills up, and then the horde comes, and you're fucked.
They call it the herd.
The herd.
Ha ha.
Oh, it is.
Very funny to call it the herd instead of the horde.
Yeah, so it does become more of a, at least in later missions, where you're like, okay, I'm going to send these two dudes over here with melee weapons. Here's like two zombies I should take out with a melee weapon. These guys I'm going to let open fire with their stuff. And it becomes a little bit more tactical in terms of where you're positioning dudes and stuff.
I was doing some of that.
But it is very big. It's, you know, it's an iOS.
If there's a bunch of guys, you have to use your melee weapons first, because if you just use your guns the whole time, you'll ultimately wind up building the sound meter up too high and you'll attract the herd. But it's really not that hard to defeat. I mean, it's anyway. Yeah. And then insult to injury, it's already built with microtransactions to where while you paid for the game, plus as you're playing the game, you're only earning a trickle of the in-game economy that will help you level up your characters. And it's constantly like, if you'd really like to level up your health faster, Garnet, you could buy 100 coins. I'm like, but yeah. I just bought the damn game. Mm. And, you know, I think that's a really difficult equation to balance correctly. And trust me, as someone who's publishing, you know, mobile games, I am very acutely aware of it, but I don't think that they got the mix right for the way I would like to play it, personally. But then the game's boring. So maybe I think part of it's predicated on, I think if the game was telling me that I'd be way happier with it and maybe I'd be more engaged. I think part of it is just that I'm just like, eh.
I'm undecided as to whether I like it or not. I was just sort of devil's advocating it.
Nicole.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to list off a few things. First off, check out my cousin's cousin's game, Shadow's Mind. It's an iOS game. And then my cousin's
what was
game,
it?
Shadow's Mind.
Shadow's Mind.
Yeah, I didn't know. Okay. It's his name. And then my cousin has a game on Kickstarter that just got funded called Fantasy Dreamer, so check that out. Third of all, check me out because I need a job. So if you're listening and want to hire me, give me and the rest of the G4 crew, we could all...
And me.
We could all use some...
I need a job, too.
We could all use some jobs.
Nicole and I will come as a package deal if you want.
It's cheaper that way. Well, actually, I have some crazy demands. I only like yellow Skittles.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
I like money.
Okay. All right. To each their own. And my fourth thing is, I leave you with this question, and I was telling Jeff M. this earlier. I think Far Cry 3 is purgatory. And I think that the whole game...
That's not a question. That's a statement.
Well,
okay, good.
Well, okay. And then I want to know if you guys agree with me and why.
And why we agree with you?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to give, any spoilers out. So, I mean, I could list the reasons, but I'm not an asshole.
Okay, we're not.
You missed the dagger eyes. I dagger eyed him.
Turns out we're not working together. Mine is just a anecdotal kind of observational thing that happened. Two things happened back to back, and it really kind of made me feel like this weird bubble that we are in oftentimes of, you know, what people are actually playing and what people are talking about, and sort of the internet intelligentsia or Illuminati or whatever you want to call it. My 8-year-old nephew calls me on the Skype. We like to FaceTime and Skype and stuff, and sometimes I keep track with what he's into. Can't stop talking to me about the Minecraft.
I knew it. I was writing it down as you said that. Knew it.
Unreal.
I can confirm he was writing that down.
Unreal. Like, talking my ear off about the Minecraft. And then later that same day, I'm walking the streets of Los Angeles, and this mom and her kid are walking along, and the kid, probably around the same age, talking to mom, and then in Minecraft you can get a saddle and you can put it on a pig and you can ride a pig around, and then in Minecraft and I'm like, I had no idea Minecraft was so big for that age group.
Indiecade saw a mom and two kids, same thing, little kids talking about Minecraft, and it was just like, what the?
It feels like such a awesome. And my nephew just plays in what is it, creative mode?
Mm-hmm.
Where you
just F around.
Just F around. Yeah. He just flies through the environments, finds things.
You played it on Xbox?
No, he plays it on PC, but.
Good for him.
PC yeah. butt?
What is he plays that? It on PC butt. It's a new pork roll attached here.
It's like pork shoulder.
Yeah, it's delicious. Anyway, I just thought that was crazy, and it really made me realize the reach of that game, especially for young kids. And I don't know if it's the Lego-ness of it or what it is, but I'm surprised that they're all gravitating, or at least that's too
place to get in your creative energy. All right, we've expended a ton of creative energy on this show. We still have three more coming this year, but the big one is coming week after next, which we are looking for your input on as far as how we organize some of our look back and look forward into 2013. So let us know what you want to do with that. Thanks to Nicole, who will be back for our big show.
Yay.
And Jeff Cannata as well.
I will be back.
And
I need a job.
And Micah and the Atlantis Group studios here in beautiful Santa Monica for accommodating us late this evening so that we could let Jeff come back and tell us about BioShock Infinite.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And Dave and Ryan and Ozzy, who was here as well.
Yes.
So I thanked everybody. That's your Weekend Confirmed. We're coming back with a little quick football wrap up. But if you're not sticking around, that's your Weekend Confirmed. And we are Ghost. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard. For me to see what was going down, my body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. All right, we're going to do the football quickly because we'd like to go home.
It's
go.
Late, yo.
Yeah, so football, Del Rio is dominating now at 24-14.
Four games up.
Oh. He's up on you, Mr. Cannata. You are in there number two at 20-18. Then the staff here and Andrea both coming in at 19-19. Guest holding down 18-20, and then James and I in the cellar at 17-21. So...
You're climbing back.
A little bit. I don't know. Also, coming up next weekend, or next week, the playoffs in the Fantasy Football League kick off.
Playoffs?
Yeah, so I'm holding down first place in both of the... In both of the Weekend Confirmed leagues.
Somebody's going to the playoffs.
So here we go this week. This week we are looking at three road dogs, starting off with the Baltimore Ravens venturing to Washington, D.C. The Ravens are getting 2.5 going into Washington, D.C. Dave, maybe since you are in the lead, you have to pick first. Damn it is not an answer, but that's close. He's still.
Would you go?
He's going with the Redskins, backing up the RG3.
God damn it.
Micah, as long as we're in the booth, you want to tell us who the engineer's going with? He's following Dave. But you won't catch up if you do that. But you will stay in the spot. All right, so he's following Dave. Jeff.
I was going to pick the Skins and let it ride with RG3, but I'm going to go Raves. I'm going to go Ravens just to try to gain some ground.
Okay. You know that the Redskins have a pretty highly rated running defense, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm hearing you. I'm not going against the Redskins at home right now. Not against the Ravens, who haven't looked that strong anyway. I'm taking the Redskins. Jeff Mattis.
Skins.
Nicole, where you're picking as the guest, so...
Well, I mean, I hate to agree with you guys, but I also go with the Redskins here. I feel like defense is going to be really strong again, and as it has been in some games. Some games we saw some lacking, but I feel like defense has been really strong. And like you said, RG3 has... I have high expectations. And side note, kicker Kai Forbath went to my high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
She's such a ringer. It's amazing.
She's amazing.
Factual.
Second up, I thought we'd do a matchup that's pretty fun because at the beginning of the year, you would have thought it would have been more meaningful for the Saints. We are on the road to visit the Giants. The Saints getting 4.5 points going into New York. I'm going to go out on a limb and take the Saints in this game. The Giants have been inconsistent. It might be a little reeling, you know, licking their chops a little bit. I mean, of course, the counter argument is coming home after getting beaten that they'd be good.
And do you think that New Orleans has not been inconsistent?
The Saints have been terrible. Here's what I think happens in this game. I think this game becomes a shootout if the weather isn't bad in New York. And in a shootout, I like the Saints a little better. Really? With Sproles back in the fold doing well.
What is the weather looking like this week?
I didn't look. Okay. It's only it's
November.
Early.
You got to assume it's not going to be lovely. Oh, it is December.
It's December, so it could be bad.
But... crappy then. It's crappy
no,
weather.
No, actually, they're playing this game back in time.
And I'm not going to lie.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they're playing this game in November.
And that changes my lineup. Hold on.
I need to catch up. And I think this is the one game that a lot of people will be inclined to take the Giants. And I think New Orleans has a chance, so I'm going to risk it.
All right,
Jeff Mattis, what do you think?
I'm not going to risk it.
You're not going to risk it.
I'm going to go with New York. Actually,
Jeff Cannata.
I don't want to pick before Dave.
I'll make him pick first on this one.
I'm going to pick the Giants.
Nicole, your analysis of this, Nicole.
I feel like, you know, last year we saw the Saints really, 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 really pull through. And I feel like it's just been downhill for them. And I don't see that changing. And I feel like even though the Giants kind of had, they've hit some tough weather, I feel like they are going to pull through here. And they have home team advantage. And they're gonna dominate.
Dave, I don't know how you follow that up. But you got to pick. Oh, he thinks interesting. He's taking the points. He thinks the Saints are only going to lose by 3. Interesting angle. Micah, where are you headed? He's headed to the Giants. And then we're going to wrap it up with a powerhouse Monday night matchup that you couldn't ask for a better matchup. Arguably the two best teams right now in football. The Houston Texans on the road to face the New England Patriots. The Texans are getting 3.5 points. I'm surprised at the line. It's just because New England, I mean, New England is New England. It's late in the year, and the money's coming in on New England. So, you know,
and they score 60 points a game.
And the Texans only allow about 17.5.
Oh, I'm taking the Texans.
So, I thought you wanted to wait for Dave.
Oh, I was. Damn. Still taking Houston.
I take it back.
I mean, whatever Dave doesn't take, if
so
he takes.
So, Dave, who are you taking?
God damn it.
The
Houston Patriots.
Who are you taking? He's taking New England. All right. So, those guys are squared off there. He's got Dave has the Patriots. Jeff has the Texans. Michael, what do you think? He's taking the Texans, and Jeff Cannata, I hate to tell you this, because it's kind of been a curse this year. I'm taking the Texans. I kind of like the Texans. Balanced offense,
yeah.
Good running game, good passing game, and Watt on defense is just a terror right now, and they're only allowing 17.5 points. I like them. I like them this game. Jeff Mattis?
I think, man, I'm going to go with New England this time. I don't really have a good reason why.
And Nicole,
cold there.
Bring
great,
us home.
Great reasons why. So, absolutely agree with you guys. This is going to be a great matchup. I think that New England is going to, they're going to win here. I feel like they have a seasoned team, a team that knows how to win. It's been winning for years. And the Texans, they're just going to choke here. And I think we're going to see a big win for New England.
Fuck me if the things she says don't sound exactly like things that any analyst on ESPN, like, it's freaking amazing. Good.
If you're looking to hire a new sports analyst, guys.
If you look at my notes, I'm writing down the mascots as they say them. Like, I don't actually know the teams.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive. All right. We will be back next week.
And
thanks, everybody.
Mascots.
Hope you have a great weekend and enjoy whatever you do.